Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. This is going to be a really interesting show today. I've got a lot of things planned. I've got some very special guests hopefully joining us. I'm not sure exactly who at this time just because it is a holiday. It is Memorial Day. Most people don't broadcast. All the major talk show hosts, they play their best of and they play things like that. I like to broadcast on holidays. And the reason I do is because I think it gives the holiday a lot more meaning when we talk about why we're doing it. So I don't mind working on a holiday. If I remember, holiday is short for holy day, but this is Memorial Day. And Memorial Day is when we remember those that have fallen in war battling for our freedom. And at the risk of being controversial, which I really sort of do, you know, on a daily basis, we need, I don't know how to put this. It's not the only way to fight for our freedom. And I don't want to take anything away from those that we've lost. A lot of times I think they were sent to places they shouldn't have been. And again, this is the time to reflect on that. And so what I do on Memorial Day is read poems, you know, by soldiers, from, about soldiers, written in combat from the War for Independence on. I was thinking maybe of doing ancient historical battles, but the more you read of poetry of war, the more you realize it's basically the same thing every time. It's the same feelings. It's the same, you know, total, you know, waste and futility, you know, and nobody really wins. It's just a question of who, I guess, loses less. But there's a cost. There's a cost to winning. There's a cost to losing. There's a cost to war. There's a huge cost. But it's interesting that as you read the poems, there's you know, basically two types. There are those that glorify the war, usually written by those that weren't there, and usually, you know, 50 to 100 years later, you know, sort of written, you know, reflecting back. And there are those, the poems that are written by those who are actually there. And it can be the civilians, it could be soldiers in combat, it could be any number of different people, but it's a very different, stark view of what's going on. So the real trick to this, of course, is to avoid the war. Now, that doesn't mean you know, give up military and, you know, be peaceful, surrender, all that kind of stuff. No. No nation was ever attacked because it was too strong. So that, in essence, the logic is there that you have a military, you know, the best in the world, so that you don't have to fight. And that's usually how it works. So was it the famous samurai, Miyamoto Musashi? People didn't fight him because they knew he'd win. So he was so good that he almost never had to fight because the outcome was already predetermined. That's Sun Tzu, The Art of War, same kind of thing. So the whole idea is to be so powerful that nobody would dare attack you because there's no point. They're not going to do anything. I believe that most wars are fought by relatively equal combatants. Most invasions are done by superior forces on inferior forces. And the really stupid things are come out of ego and arrogance, like when Hitler attacked Stalin in Russia. Unbelievable. Oh, good. My second guest has already checked in, and so that's wonderful. So what's going to make today's show so special is that in an hour, I have Catherine Arnett joining us. And so I'm just going to type a quick message to her, talk to you in an hour, just because it's live radio and I can do it. Just don't mind me. This is where I need, once I get myself a producer, it would be a whole lot easier to be able to do things like this and just take a break or something like that. So let's just put talk in an hour. So she knows, I know. So, you know, get your coffee, Catherine. Now, Catherine, besides being an incredibly special friend of mine, is fighting for freedom in a way that we don't usually talk about on Memorial Day. And whereas, you know, we do talk about the soldiers, we talk about the lives lost, we should talk more about the lives saved, more about the survivors. So we learn from this. And you want to learn from your bad experiences. You want to learn, for example, that it makes no sense to fight a war that can't be won in Afghanistan for 20 years because no one knows what winning is, and then to surrender, you know, and get a bunch of our people killed and give up $85 billion worth of arms. That makes no sense unless your purpose is to destroy the United States, and that's one of the problems. So the real fight for freedom is right here. The fight for freedom, the most important fight for freedom is not on some foreign battlefield. It's not someplace that's going to invade us because we haven't been invaded, I think, since the War of 1812 in terms of military, and not since 9/11 in terms of terrorism. And so, but even then, the terrorists were not going to defeat this country. They weren't going to seize territory. They were just trying to destroy part of us, in this case, the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, the White House, and the Capitol building. Unfortunately, they didn't succeed at that. But as far as actual war, 1812 was the last invasion of the continental United States. World War II was the last invasion of territorial United States, at that time Hawaii, with the invasion of Pearl Harbor by Japan. And so, but since World War II, something changed after World War II. We started fighting wars not to win. It's almost like when Eisenhower talked about the military-industrial complex, we talked about wars. We had wars that were fought to be fought, wars to make money for the military-industrial complex, wars to help the bankers with loans and the spenders and the people in Congress to, you know, put money into their district with military bases, military contractors, you know, or defense contractors, things like that. So you take a look at wars that I think didn't have to be fought. Well, after World War II, pretty much all of them, Vietnam, Korea, Iraq, Afghanistan, plus a lot of military interventions. You know, just because you have a military doesn't mean you have to use it. And I think one of the only presidents who didn't use it in recent history was Donald Trump for starting a war. He used the military, you know, took out ISIS, you know, killed a couple of really bad people. And that makes sense. Get in, get out. If you can accomplish your mission with special forces in a limited operation, get in, you know, accomplish your goal and get out, that's ideal. I mean, that's perfect compared to 20 years of Afghanistan with all the lost lives and the crippled lives. You know, I mean, wounded warriors shouldn't have to exist, but it does. And so part of what I like to do today, well, I don't know if I like to do it, but part of what I do on Memorial Day is read some of the more graphic and some of the more intense poems and some of the more descriptive of what actually was going on at various times in history. And so that's what I'm going to do for the balance of this hour. Second hour, we're going to talk to Catherine Arnett, who I think has been court-martialed at least once, possibly on her second now. We've got her for a limited amount of time. I never know what's going to happen, whether she's going to be a victim of yet another military example-making, because that's what they're doing with her. She refused to take the COVID shot. And quite honestly, she's the only one who is following the law, because the COVID shot's experimental, and troops cannot take experimental drugs. And so the idea of mandating an experimental drug that's illegal is a huge contradiction. And yet the people that are mandating something that they cannot legally mandate are court-martialing Catherine Arnett for basically following the real orders. In other words, following the law. And so rather than get into the particulars and say too much, I'm going to let her tell the story. Because it's still, this is ongoing. What they call this? You know, they say an ongoing investigation means you can't question it. This is an ongoing case. And so we've got her today, and it's going to be incredible. I think we got a couple of other folks I've invited to join us. And so again, Catherine, if you're listening now, hang tight for a bit. This is going to be an interesting hour. And then Jonathan will join us at the top of the hour as well with Catherine. And Dorothy, I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen with this is not a day for a sex and sensuality report. It just isn't. So we're not going to do that in terms of that, but I'd love to have Dorothy's opinion on everything we're talking about. So as we go and as I see how things develop, if Catherine has more time, we might just keep her for the whole 2 hours. I don't know. I just don't know yet. You know, this is one of those days we see what develops because it is a holiday, you know, and who knows who's going to be listening live and who has events that they are doing. You know, there's a lot of events, I'm sure, at Arlington National Cemetery. It's just too bad Brandon has to be there. There's a lot of other things that are going on around the country. We have our own Veterans Memorial Park here in Milton, Florida, which will be having services as well. And so that's what's going on. Let me start with some poetry here. And so I collect a bunch. The biggest problem is just too much of it. And there's so much that has been written. It's really quite staggering, the amount of material. So let me just start with some here. It's kind of random. I mean, I read through a bunch of them and I think, well, I'll write that one down. I think my list gets too long. It just gets very cumbersome. So I just kind of start. And so this is from the website Hub Pages. That's HUBPAGES. And we're going to start off with Writer Fox. That is the pen name of the person. And the website is War Poetry, 50 poems about war. I'm not going to read all 50, but I will read the ones that, some of these I remember from year to year. It's really quite interesting. Unfortunately, they got a table of contents section that's not working, so I kind of have to go through these individually. All right, so let's start with the first poem. This is by Ryder Fox. See if I can get you a year. It doesn't give a year when it's written. The poem is, there are a few things worth dying for. There are a few things worth living for. Land is not enough for either. It's only dust. And under that, the corpse is buried for 6,000 years. And under that, the rock spewed forth from 1,000 suns. And the sky is full of balls, like this one. You could have your pick of them. There are enough of them to go around, and then some. Land is not enough. There's always something more than that to drive the soldier to his duty. Don't shoot until you know it. If not, you'll miss the mark. Next poem. And I just, you know, you can think about these. You can look them up yourself. You can contemplate them. The thing about radio is being a live medium and not having a visual, there's really not time for me to let you contemplate these poems. But just listen and see how it hits you. Here's another one by Ryder Fox called Siren Swell. Siren Swell, this one's for real. It's not a drill. Slip the slurping baby from the breast. Bonds bellowing. There's no such thing as sheltering beneath the twisting tangle of these times. Full alert. The cannons spurt. Their total worth. His word gyring on the vortices of pi. Wing to wing. The gathering. Exhibiting. There's no place like war. There's no place like war. There's no place like war. This is another one by Ryder Fox. General Staff Headquarters, Tel Aviv. That's what it's called. All your life you have trained for the day ahead of you, and this day is the imagining of the next day, of the next week, of the next war. And the budget is never enough, but it has to be enough. The draft numbers are never enough, but they have to be enough. And somewhere between, a line is drawn, stopping short of the right answer. Scan the sky and the sea and the ground. Intercept communications. Speak to the spies. Look for the signs. Prepare the defensive offense defense. The retaliation response ratio. The if then what. Write the plan in the book of plans. Send for the savants of strategy. Tell them to forget the last war. The weapons have changed, and you shall not covet your neighbor's weapon. You must covet a better one. And someone will tell you the lands have not changed, but you know they have. You have the photographs. Calculate, anticipate the activation of the plan. How many sorties can a pilot fly before he drowns in the sea of his sweat and slips like a fish through the egg bubble? How many rounds can a young man fire before his eyes lose their focus and mist over the sights? How many times can the sea rock the sailor till his bones unbolt or at the joints? Calculate. Anticipate the activation of the plan. Send the diplomats abroad. Send the equipment brokers abroad. Place your bets on the race. Who will buy for you a silver bowl of time? Calculate, anticipate the activation of the plan. Who will go door to door to the kingdoms of the earth? Count your friends. Find one. Find one. Dare someone to find one. And God said, you shall not fear, but fear is your employer. And the fear of myopia is the milk stirred in your morning coffee, curded to cheese in your lunch, fed to your meat for dinner, dining with Dimona in your dreams, answering the call in the night. The instruments did not warn. The sonar did not detect the spot on the lung. Have someone's head for this. I'm not sure what Dimona means. I'll look for that. And here we go. Okay, here it says, according to foreign media, Dimona, Israel, is one of the locations of Israel's nuclear reactors. Israel's presumed nuclear capabilities are considered a weapon of last resort, also known as the Samson option. All right, Mark Twain, another one of my favorite writers. One of his best pieces is on the dangers of dying and of staying in bed. He talks about all who die in bed. In other words, those who don't live their lives, they're stuck in bed. You know, they don't take the trains, they don't take the boats, they don't travel, they don't experience, they don't take a risk, they don't climb mountains, they don't do anything. They just want to be safe, so they stay home and die in bed. You know, you're going to die in bed most likely anyway. The question is what you do between times. So that's a great essay by him. So Mark Twain wrote the War Prayer. I'll give you a little background on this because this is one I do remember. The War Prayer in 1905, as a protest against the Philippine-American War, his publisher refused to publish it, and his family objected too. Twain said, "I have told the whole truth in that, and only dead men can tell the truth in this world. It can be published after I'm dead." I think that's exactly what happened. He says, "The poem was published posthumously in 1916, 2 years after World War I began. It has been in print since that day." Of course, they give you a little video and all kinds of other things like that. Let me give you The War Prayer by Mark Twain. O Lord, our Father, our young patriots, idols of our hearts, go forth to battle. Be thou near them, with them in spirit. We also go forth from the sweet peace of our beloved firesides to smite the foe. O Lord, our God, help us to tear their soldiers to bloody shreds with our shells. Help us to cover their smiling fields with the pale forms of their patriot dead. Help us to drown the thunder of the guns with the shrieks of their wounded, writhing in pain. Help us to lay waste their humble homes with a hurricane of fire. Help us to wring the hearts of their unoffending widows with unavailing grief. Help us to turn them out roofless with little children to wander unfriended, the wastes of their desolated land in rags and hunger and thirst, sports of the sun flames of summer and the icy winds of winter. Broken in spirit, worn in travail, imploring thee for the refuge of the grave and denied it for our sakes who adore thee. Lord, blast their hopes, blight their lives, protract their bitter pilgrimage, make heavy their steps, water their way with their tears, stain the white snow with the blood of their wounded feet. We ask it in the spirit of love, of him who is the source of love and who is the ever-faithful refuge and friend of all that are sore, beset, and seek his aid with humble and contrite hearts." Yeah, you're going to have to think about that one for a little bit. And so Mark Twain, one of my favorites. This one, I mean, this is one of the ones I read every year. And I should probably read it more often. But it is a contradiction, I believe, to ask God's help in, especially in a war where which is not of the other side, with the other side, whatever they are, the other nation's making. In other words, if you're attacked, self-defense is one thing. Offense is something entirely different. And the American-Philippine War, I think, falls under we were the offense at that particular point. I think it's Carl Sandburg is a famous poet also. They have a little blurb here. It says, "Soldier poems. Soldier poems speak to every generation, for the underlying emotions are the same no matter what the war." This is what I was talking about earlier. "In this collection of war poetry, you will find poems about soldiers, and you will find poems written by soldiers." Those are the ones I like to focus on as much as I can, but sometimes the most popular poems, the ones that are easiest to find, are not the ones you want to read, because a lot of times they're the glorification of war, and I'll do that when I get to the Charge of the Light Brigade, which is usually the poem I start with. But it didn't quite work out. We'll get to the Charge of the Light Brigade, one of the most disgusting glorifications of war ever. And it's interesting when you think about it that war, you know, the earlier wars, the 1800s wars, Napoleonic wars, big wars, you know, were glorified. And people were like, "Oh, let's go," you know, 1812, "let's go." You know, the British, the United States, you know, the war on the colonies, "Hey, let's go, this is great." You know, young men, adventure. You know, they never talk of death. They never talk about the horrors of war. And they can get away with it before, you know, basically movies. So the movies, you know, the old Fox Movie Tone News, and I don't think it's the same Fox as today, but anyway, Fox Movie Tone News was a company that did newsreels. And so when people, before television, this would be back in the early 1900s, when they go to the movies, you know, even, I don't know if it's the silent movies, probably as soon as they had talking phones. Anyway, you had the Fox Movie Tone News. And probably other ways to get news out. Newspapers, of course, were doing it too. It's not the same thing as watching something visually on a screen. Anyway, so the movies would show the real horrors of war. In World War I, you start to get movies back. And say, wait a minute, that doesn't look like my image of war. And then World War II, of course, even worse. And by Vietnam, it was on television. And so it's interesting that the increase in coverage of war, we haven't had a world war since television began. I find that interesting. You know, it's a little harder to get young men and now women to sign up for something that they don't believe in. And if I can be controversial again, why would you sign up to fight for an illegal government? I mean, that's what we've got. I've started calling him Illegal Brandon for a reason. He's as illegal as the people he's bringing in. So if you don't even have a legal government, how can you have a legal, you know, declaration? And we're not going to get, well, we're in a declaration of war since World War II. But any commitment of forces under this illegal administration is illegal. It's unjust. You know, so the question is, how do you get people to go when the government itself is illegal? No one seems to be asking that question, so I will. Let me get back to Carl Sandburg. He says, "The people, yes," by Carl Sandburg. "The little girl saw the first troop parade and asked, 'What are those?' 'Soldiers.' 'Well, what are soldiers?' 'They are for war. They fight, and each tries to kill as many of the other side as he can.' The girl held still and studied. 'Do you know something?' 'I know something.' 'Yes, what is it you know?' 'Sometime they'll give a war, and nobody will come.'" Here's another one by Carl Sandburg, written in 1916, so this has been the middle of World War I. He says, "And they obey. Smash down the cities, knock the walls to pieces, break the factories and cathedrals, warehouses and homes, into loose piles of stone and lumber and black burnt wood. You are the soldiers, and we command you. Build up the cities, set the walls again. Put together once more the factories and cathedrals, warehouses and homes, into buildings for life and labor. You are workmen and citizens all. We command you." This is not my most exciting hour or whatever I do this. I mean, it has to be done. I mean, it should be done. But, you know, I just don't hold with the glorification of war because I've studied it too much. Doesn't mean I want to be in one. I don't. In fact, I think a lot of what I do here at Action Radio, the fighting for our freedom, is to avoid war, is to avoid a civil war. You know, there are those, and I hear them all the time, you know, it's either ballots or bullets, and people don't trust ballots. Well, you've got to go to bullets. No, you don't. The whole reason for Action Radio is bills, is to change the laws that govern us, to have we the people actually write the laws that we consent to be governed by, and supply those to government and say, "Here, this is how we consent to be governed." And with enough people behind those bills, I believe that they will pass because Congress, you know, will force to be representative if we can generate more power, more enthusiasm, more popular will, then the lobbyists can generate money. Can't get elected if you don't get the votes. And especially as we clean up the voting systems and get rid of the machines and go back to paper ballots and actually make sure that our elections are legal, it goes hand in hand with what we're doing here to get the laws passed that bring back our freedom. Basically, what I'm looking for is 1776 ideals with 2023 technology. And it can be done. There's a lot of doom and gloom people out there say it can't be done. And those people raise complaining to an art form. They say, "No, it's too late. Everything's over. We're doomed, doomed, doomed." You're like, you know, Dr. Smith on Lost in Space. Doomed, doomed, we're doomed. No, we're not doomed. As long, you know, John Paul Jones, "I have not yet begun to fight, and the ship was sinking." You know, yeah, I'm just getting started. You know, same thing with Action Radio. Yeah, Don, are you kidding? You haven't seen anything yet. So be encouraged. But learn from the soldiers. Learn from the people that wrote about this. Learn that if we end up in Sudan or if our soldiers are sent to Ukraine, that there's no reason for it. None. Ukraine is a European problem. So you got Russia, East Europe, and Western Europe. Let them figure it out. Their problem. A Dead Statesman by Rudyard Kipling, 1865 to 1936. He says, "I could not dig, I dared not rob, therefore I lied to please the mob. Now all my lies are proved untrue, and I must face the men I slew. What tale shall serve me here among mine angry and defrauded young?" Could say War of Independence. At least they say War for Independence and not Revolutionary War, because although we're causing a revolution of thought, we weren't revolting, so to speak. Let me read you one of the more glorification poems. I never really liked this one, but I read it anyway because I think it misses the point. It tries to make, you know, the battle look good. I mean, battles are necessary. I mean, it was necessary for us to do battle with England to get our freedom. It was necessary, but war itself is a bad thing. And so the question is, that was, you know, you want to talk about fighting for our freedom? Probably the greatest moment in the history of this country was that war with Britain. As fighting for our freedom directly, the soldiers, everybody, the entire colonies were fighting for our freedom to become a nation. And I question now that I think there's a lot more ways people are fighting for freedom, a lot more ways people have to fight for freedom. So I asked Catherine to come on the show. She's fighting for freedom more than almost anybody else I know. She's the bravest person I know. And so we're going to hear her story. It's going to be, again, I think a very interesting second hour. Third hour, I have no idea what's going to happen. We'll know that when we get there. Concord Hymn by Ralph Waldo Emerson, written in 1836. By the rude bridge that arched the flood, their flag to April's breeze unfurled. Here once the embattled farmer stood and fired the shot heard round the world. The foe long since in silence slept, alike the conqueror silent sleeps, and time the ruined bridge has swept down the dark stream which seaward creeps. On this green bank, by this soft stream, we set today a votive stone, that memory may their deed redeem when, like our sires, our sons are gone. Spirit that made these heroes dare to die and leave their children free, bid time and nature gently spare the shaft we raise to them and thee. Yeah, here from the Civil War. It's really quiet here today. Nobody's calling. Nobody's on live chat. It's just me. Just me talking. Jacob Goodpasture is the title of the poem. Edgar Lee Masters is the author. From the Spoon River Anthology. He says, when Fort Sumter fell and war came, I cried out in bitterness of soul, O glorious Republic, now no more. When they buried my soldier's son to the call of trumpets and the sound of drums, my heart broke beneath the weight of 80 years, and I cried, O son who died in a cause unjust, in the strife of freedom slain, and I crept here under the grass, and now from the battlements of time, behold, thrice 30 million souls being bound together in the love of larger truth, wrapped in the expectation of the birth of a new beauty, sprung from brotherhood and wisdom. I, with eyes of spirit, see the transfiguration before you see it. But ye infinite brood of golden eagles nesting ever higher, wheeling ever higher, the sunlight wooing of lofty places of thought, forgive the blindness of the departed owl. All right, I'm going to skip down a little bit. There's some that I recognize. This one I recognize. Walt Whitman, another amazing poet of our times. This one's called The Wound Dresser. Bearing the bandages, water, and sponge, straight and swift to my wounded I go. Where they lie on the ground after the battle brought in, where their priceless blood reddens the grass, the ground, or to the rows of the hospital tent, or under the roofed hospital, to the long rows of cots up and down each side I return. To each and all, one after another, I draw near. Not one do I miss. An attendant follows, holding a tray. He carries a refuse pail, soon to be filled with clotted rags and blood, emptied and filled again. I onward go. I stop, with hinged knees and steady hand, to dress wounds. I am firm with each. The pangs are sharp, yet unavoidable. One turns to me his appealing eyes. Poor boy, I never knew you, yet I think I could not refuse this moment to die for you if that would save you. On I go. Open the doors of time, open hospital doors. The crushed head I dress, poor crazed hand, tear not the bandage away. The neck of the cavalryman with the bullet through and through I examine. Hard the breathing rattles, quite glazed already the eye, yet life struggles hard. Come, sweet death. Be persuaded, O beautiful death, in mercy come quickly. From the stump of the arm, the amputated hand, I undo the clotted lint, remove the slew, wash off the matter and blood. Back on his pillow, the soldier bends with curved neck and side falling head. His eyes are closed, his face is pale, he dares not look at the bloody stump, and has not yet looked on it. I dress the wound in the side, deep, deep, but a day or two more, for see the frame all wasted and sinking, and the yellow-blue countenance see. I dress the perforated shoulder, the foot with a bullet wound, cleanse the one with a gnawing and putrid gangrene, so sickening, so offensive, while the attendant stands beside me, behind me, holding the tray and pail. I am faithful, I do not give out. The fractured thigh, the knee, the wound in the abdomen, these and more I dress with impassive hand, yet deep in my breast a fire, a burning flame. Yeah, I remember these. Remember these from times past. I'm going to skip down a little bit. Yeah, let's see. We got First World War. This is Wilfred Owen. It says, Many First World War poems were written by soldier poets, that is, soldiers who wrote poetry while in action rather than poets who wrote about soldiers. And it says, a British son, Wilfred Edgar Salter Owen, was killed in action in northern France in 1918, fighting a courageous battle that posthumously earned him the Military Cross. He was 25 years old. His death came 1 week before the armistice. His poems survived in letters written to his mother, in his diaries, and in handwritten manuscripts found in his body. Only a handful of his poems were published prior to his death. In May 1918, he wrote a preface for his collection of poetry that he hoped to publish. Here's an excerpt here. He says, this book is not about heroes. English poetry is not yet fit to speak of them. Nor is it about deeds or lands or anything about glory, honor, mighty might, majesty, dominion, or power, except war. Above all, I am not concerned with poetry. My subject is war and the pity of war. The poetry is the pity. Yet these eulogies are, to this generation, in no sense consolatory. Excuse me. They may be to the next. All a poet can do today is warn. That is why the true poets must be truthful. Let's see if I can get one of his here. Here's one of his, this one I remember too from previous years. Dulce et decorum est. It's Latin. Let me get the translation for you. It is sweet and right to die for one's country. And that comes from Horace, Odes, you know, 3. And for those of you that read ancient Greek literature, anyway, Horace, I guess, is Roman. I'm sorry. Dulce et decorum est by Wilfred Owen. Bent double like old beggars under sacks, knock-kneed coughing like hags, we cursed through sludge, till on the haunting flares we turned our backs and towards our distant rest began to trudge. Men marched asleep. Many had lost their boots, but limped on, bloodshot, all went lame, all blind, drunk with fatigue, deaf even to the hoots of tired, outstripped 5-9s that dropped behind. Gas, gas, quick, boys. An ecstasy of fumbling, fitting the clumsy helmets just in time. But someone still was yelling out and stumbling and floundering like a man in fire or lime. Dim through the misty panes and thick green light, as under a green sea, I saw him drowning in all my dreams before my helpless sight. He plunges at me, muttering, choking, drowning. If in some smothering dreams you too could pace behind the wagon that we flung him in and watch the white eyes writhing in his face, his hanging face, like a devil sick of sin. If you could hear at every jolt the blood come gargling from the froth-corrupted lungs, obscene as cancer, bitter as the cud of vile, incurable sores on innocent tongues, my friend, you would not tell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory the old lie, dulce et decorum est, pro patria mori. So one might be wondering why I'm not reading a lot of American poems. These are just ones I found that kind of come from all over. I think Wilfred Owen is British. Obviously, he's British. There's more. There's more. I might... a lot of these get fairly similar after a while. One of the most famous is by John Alexander McCrae, a Canadian medical doctor and artillery veteran of the Second Boer War, fighting for the British in South Africa. This is from the website, obviously. He served in World War I as a surgeon at the Canadian hospital set up in northern France, where he died of pneumonia in 1918. He once remarked to a friend, all the goddamn doctors in this world will not win this bloody war. What we need is more and more fighting men. He wrote In Flanders Fields, perhaps the most famous of all World War I poems, when a close friend died in battle. So here's In Flanders Fields by Lieutenant Colonel John McCrae. In Flanders Fields, the poppies blow beneath the crosses row on row that mark our place, and in the sky the larks still bravely singing fly. Scarce heard amid the guns below, we are the dead. Short days ago, we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, now we lie in Flanders Fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe, to you from failing hands we throw. The torch be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders Fields. Huh. A couple more here, and I'm going to switch over to a different website. Here's one called The General, written by Siegfried Sassoon, 1917, while serving in World War I. Good morning, the general said, when we met him last week on our way to the line. Now the soldiers he smiled at are most of them dead and were cursing his staff for incompetent swine. "He's a cheery old card," grunted Harry to Jack as they slogged up to Arras with rifle and pack. "But he did for them both by his plan of attack." Yeah, one of the biggest things about World War I were the generals who ordered day after day, week after week, month after month, for people to, basically do bayonet charges into barbed wire and machine guns. It was suicide. It was crazy. And yeah, that's what they did. All right. Let me see. Let me get to Carl Sandburg. Yeah. Do Carl Sandburg one. Then I might take a break here. Written in 1916. "In the old wars, drum of hooves and beat of shod feet. In the new wars, hum of motors and the tread of rubber tires. In the wars to come, silent wheels and whir of rods not yet dreamed out in the heads of men. In the old wars, clutches of short swords and jabs into faces with spears. In the new wars, long-range guns and smashed walls, guns running a spit of metal and men falling in tens and twenties. In the wars to come, new silent deaths, new silent hurlers not yet dreamed out in the heads of men. In the old wars, kings quarreling and thousands of men following. In the new wars, kings quarreling and millions of men following. In the wars to come, kings kicked under the dust and millions of men following great causes not yet dreamed out in the heads of men." Yeah, that's pretty prophetic. That's 1916, and there's a lot that had a lot in that for us today. Okay, let me see if I want to Spanish American World War II poetry. Here's one, "Aristocrats" by Keith Douglas. "The noble horse with courage in his eye, clean in the bone, looks up at a shellburst. Away fly the images of the shires, but he puts the pipe back in his mouth. Peter was unfortunately killed by an 88. It took his leg away. He died in the ambulance. I saw him crawling on the sand. He said, 'It's most unfair. They've shot my foot off. How can I live among this gentle, obsolescent breed of heroes and not weep? Unicorns, almost. For they are fading into two legends, in which their stupidity and chivalry are celebrated. Each fool and hero will be an immortal. These plains were their cricket pitch, and the mountains, the tremendous drop fences, brought down some of the runners. Here then, under the stones and earth, they dispose themselves. I think with their famous unconcern, it is not gunfire I hear, but a hunting horn." Yeah, I'm going to do, let's get to World War II. Oh, Troop Train. This is one of those, another one that I remember, the famous poems. "Troop Train" by Carl Shapiro. "It stops the town we come through. Workers raise their oily arms in good statue, salute and grin. Kids scream as at a circus. Businessmen glance hopefully and go the measured way. And women standing at the dumbstruck door more slowly wave and seem to warn us back, as if a tear blinding the course of war might once dissolve our iron in their sweet wish. Fruit of the world, oh, clustered on ourselves, we hang as from a cornucopia until friendliness with faces bunched to spray the streets with catcalls and with leers. A bottle smashes on the moving ties and eyes fixed on a lady smiling pink, stretched like a rubber band and snap and sting, the mouth that wants the drink of water kiss. And on through crummy continents and days, deliberate, grimy, slightly drunk we crawl, the good bad boys of circumstance and chance, whose bucket helmets bang the empty wall, where twist the murdered bodies of our packs next to the guns that only seem themselves. In distance, like a strap adjusted shrinks, tightens across the shoulder and holds firm. Here is a deck of cards. Out of this hand, dealer, deal me my luck, a pair of bulls, the right to draw a flush, the one-eyed jack. Diamonds and hearts are red, but spades are black, and spades are spades, and clubs are clovers, black, but deal me winners, souvenirs of peace. This stands to reason and arithmetic. Luck also travels, and not all come back. Trains lead to ships, and ships to death, or trains, and trains to death, or trucks, and trucks to death, or trucks lead to the march to death, or that survival, which is all we our hope. And death leads back to trucks and trains and ships. But life leads to the march, O flag, at last, the place of life found after trains and death, nightfall of nations, brilliant after war." Okay, let me switch. Actually, there's one poem that always stood out with me from World War II. It's called The Death of the Ball Turret Gunner. And it's on one of these sites, but I pull it out separately just because it's only five lines. But for those that don't know, a ball turret is the bottom of a B-17. And what's there is it's the belly, usually referred to as the belly gunner. In fact, I actually knew a belly gunner who was a pilot, you know, in Oakland, California when I was teaching flying. And Ace Darrow, they called him Ace. He actually shot planes down from the belly. And so it would be Messerschmitts, Focke-Wulfs, things like that. Anyway, so but the ball turret was a precarious place. It was incredibly dangerous because it could get jammed. And if the gear didn't come down and they couldn't raise the ball turret, then that the ball turret and they couldn't get the ball turret person out, they died when the airplane landed. And that happened, you know, some, I guess a fair amount of times when they had, you know, planes letting gear up. You know, you almost wish they had like an escape hatch where they could just, you know, have like a fail-safe opening where they could drop out and pull a parachute. But, you know, this was war and stuff happened. This is Randall Jarrell. This is a very controversial poem at the time. And you'll see why very shortly. This is The Death of the Ball Turret Gunner. From my mother's sleep, I fell into the state and I hunched in its belly till my wet fur froze. 6 miles from Earth, loosed from its dream of life, I woke to black flak and the nightmare fighters. When I died, they washed me out of the turret with a hose. So I'll let you sit with that for a bit. I'm trying to think what to, I don't want to just play commercials. That doesn't seem right. There's something, I don't know. There's something kind of special about what we do here on this day. I got some others for you. I got many others for you. Let me see if I can find some of the ones I was looking at. All right, let me give you some of the more modern ones. Let me just, do you want to take a break at this time? No, I think I can go through it. There's something innocuous I can play for you. Yeah, let me see. Let me give you my, where's my fifes and drums? We'll play that for you now. Not to glorify war, but just because I need, just going to take a quick break here and we'll check with some of my messages. I'll be right back. Here we go. So we're back here, and I've got some older poems, some newer poems, some different things here. Let me read you the worst, the one that glorifies war, and the one that always has bothered me the most. And so, because that, you know, most of the soldiers died, so they're glorifying the death of a whole bunch of folks. This is Alfred Lord Tennyson, The Charge of the Light Brigade. You'll see what I mean as I read it. Again, this is before television and movies, before they had to ask people if they wanted to go. Half a league, half a league, half a league onward, all in the valley of death rode the 600. Forward, the light brigade, charge for the guns, he said. Into the valley of death rode the 600. Forward, the light brigade, was there a man dismayed? Not though the soldier knew, someone had blundered. Theirs not to make reply, theirs not to reason why, theirs but to do and die. Into the valley of death rode the 600. Cannon to the right of them, cannon to the left of them, cannon in front of them, volleyed and thundered, stormed at with shot and shell. Boldly they rode and well into the jaws of death, into the mouth of hell, rode the 600. Flashed all their sabers bare, flashed as they turned in air, sabering the gunners there, charging an enemy, an army, while all the world wondered, plunged in the battery smoke, Right through the line they broke. Cossack and Russian reeled from the saber stroke, shattered and sundered. Then they rode back, but not the 600. Not the 600. Cannon to the right of them, cannon to the left of them, cannon behind them, volleyed and thundered, stormed at with shot and shell, while horse and hero fell. They that fought so well came through the jaws of death, back from the mouth of hell, all that was left of them, left of 600. When can their glory fade? Oh, the wild charge they made. All the world wondered. Honor the charge they made. Honor the Light Brigade. Noble 600. So this was an unmitigated British disaster, sending troops in with sabers against cannon, artillery on all sides, including behind them eventually. It was a slaughter. And yet Alfred Lord Tennyson, in order to glorify war, says, honor the charge they made. No, somebody should have had a brain and said, no, we're not going to do this. This is suicide. You know, bravely, bravely, they followed orders and died. And so we need to honor the fight, honor the soldier, but not glorify the stupidity that seems to happen way too often. Anybody wants to join me, feel free. 215-383-3832. I haven't taken calls yet. I think most people don't realize I'm live. I think this is going to be one of those podcast shows. Nobody's on live chat. And so I got Jonathan and Catherine joining us at the top of the hour. And who knows who else? Like I say, it could be a very interesting day here. Let me see if I can get some other ones here that I have picked out. Here's one that says, these are some of the more modern poems. Ilya Kaminsky, We Lived Happily During the War. That's the title, We Lived Happily During the War. And when they bombed other people's houses, we protested, but not enough. We opposed them, but not enough. I was in my bed, around my bed, America was falling. Invisible house by invisible house by invisible house. I took a chair outside and watched the sun. In the sixth month of a disastrous rain, in the house of money, in the street of money, in the city of money, in the country of money, our great country of money, we forgive us. Lived happily during the war. Let me get you the Hurt Locker. It's another amazing poem. Brian Turner. Nothing but hurt left here. Nothing but bullets and pain. And the bled out slumping. And all the F word. And goddams. And Jesus Christ of the wounded. Nothing left here but the hurt. Believe it when you see it. Believe it when a 12-year-old rolls a grenade into a room. Or when a sniper punches a hole deep in someone's skull. Believe it when four men step from a taxi cab in Mosul to shower the street in brass and fire. Open the Hurt Locker and see what there is of knives and teeth. Open the Hurt Locker and learn how rough men come hunting for souls. And there's some other ones here. It's really quiet in here right now. So I wonder if hopefully I'm still broadcasting. Let's see if I get someone here. Here's one. After experience taught me. This is by W.D. Snodgrass. After experience taught me that all the ordinary surroundings of social life are futile and vain. I'm going to show you something very ugly. Someday it might save your life. Seeing that none of the things I feared contain in themselves anything either good or bad. What if you were caught without a knife? Nothing, even a loop of piano wire. Expecting only in the effect they had upon my mind, I resolved to inquire. Take the first two fingers of this hand, fork them out, kind of a V for victory. Whether there might be something whose discovery would grant me supreme, unending happiness. And jam them into the eyes of your enemy. You have to do this hard, very hard, then press. No virtue can be thought to have priority over this endeavor to preserve one's being. Both fingers down around the cheekbone and setting your foot high into the chest. No man can desire to act rightly, to be blessed, to live rightly without simultaneously. You must call up every strength you own, and you can rip off the whole facial mask. Wishing to be, to act, to live, he must ask first, in other words, to actually exist. And you, whiner, who waste your time dawdling over the remorseless earth, what evil, what unspeakable crime have you made your life worth? Obviously, that's two people talking within that poem. That's why I did my changing my voice. Hopefully it worked. Sure. All right, what else have I got here? I actually wrote a few of these down. There's so many different poems here. at the bomb testing site by Wilfred E. Stafford. At noon in the desert, At noon in the desert, a panting lizard waited for history, its elbows tense, watching the curve of a particular road as if something might happen. It was looking at something farther off that people could see, an important scene, acted in stone for little cells at the flute end of consequences. There was just a continent without much on it under a sky that never cared less. Ready for a change, the elbows waited, the hands gripped hard on the desert. Needless to say, I'm flipping back and forth between a lot of different things here. Oh, here's, see if I can find this one. There are a couple of different sections. Again, this was, I'll find it. There we go. Anthem for Doomed Youth, and this is Wilfred Owen again. What passing bells for those who die as cattle? Only the monstrous anger of the guns, only the stuttering rifles' rapid rattle can patter out their hasty horizons. No mockeries now for them, no prayers nor bells, nor any voice of mourning save the choirs, the shrill, demented choirs of wailing shells, and bugles calling for them from sad shires. What candles may be held to speed them all? Not in the hands of boys, but in their eyes shall shine the holy glimmers of goodbyes. The pallor of girls' brows shall be their pall, their flowers the tenderness of patient minds, and each slow dusk a drawing down of blinds. A lot of this is very metaphorical, a lot of it's very image-based. Messages coming in here. Okay. Don't mind me. I'm just going to check something real quickly. And so I got to, hopefully Josie's going to call in. But yeah, anybody's welcome to call. I mean, I'm just, I kind of like people calling, so I know that, all the transmitters are working. I still don't have levels. I wish I did. To tell when I'm broadcasting. All right, so 215-383-3832. Anybody's welcome to join us. We also have live chat working. Skype line, if you want to call on the Skype line, you have to call the day before so I can approve your account, and then we can get you on. But yeah, anybody's welcome to call. Let me see if I can find you another couple of things here. Yeah, I think I'm the only person that does this. On Memorial Day, but that's kind of what we do here. Grass by Carl Sandburg. Pile the bodies high at Austerlitz and Waterloo. Shovel them under and let me work. I am the grass. I cover all. And pile them high at Gettysburg and pile them high at Ypres and Verdun. Shovel them under and let me work. 2 years, 10 years, and passengers ask the conductor, what place is this? Where are we now? I am the grass. Let me work. So we can get you one or two more here. Coming at the top of the hour, and I'll probably play, we're going to be changing moods a little bit. So this is your thinking hour. Here's one, Gettysburg. Yeah, the Gettysburg poem is pretty intense. There we go. Gettysburg, July 1st, 1863, by Jane Kenyon. We don't have a lot, there's a lot of... It's interesting, you know, I should probably find more poems by women. As I said, I'm looking for soldiers. Soldiers, but mostly men. But it doesn't mean that this person can't write a very intense poem. Jane Kenyon, K-E-N-Y-O-N. The young man, hardly more than a boy, who fired the shot that looked at him with an air, not of anger, but of concentration, as if he were surveying a road or feeding a length of wood into a saw. It had to be done just so. The bullet passed through his upper chest, below the collarbone. The pain was not what he might have feared. Strangely exhilarated, he staggered out of the pasture and into the grove of trees. He pressed and pressed the wound, trying to staunch the blood, but he could only press what he could reach, and he could not reach his back where the bullet had exited. He lay on the earth, smelling the leaves and mosses, musty and damp and cool after the blaze of open afternoon. How good the earth smelled, as it had when he was a boy, hiding from his father, who was intent on strapping him for doing his chores late one time too many. A cowbird razzed him from a fence. It isn't mockery, he thought. No malice in it, just a noise. Stray bullets nicked the oaks overhead. Leaves and splinters fell. Someone near him groaned, but it was his own voice he heard. His fingers and feet tingled, the roof of his mouth and the bridge of his nose. He became dry, dry, and thought of Christ, who said, I thirst. His man smell, the smell of his hair and skin, his sweat, the salt smell of his cock and the little ferny hairs that two women had known, left him, and a sharp, almost sweet smell began to rise from his open mouth in the warm shade of the oaks. A streak of sun climbed the rough trunk of a tree, but he did not see it with his open eye. Let's bring on Josie here. Good morning, Josie. This is a little intense for me. I'm sort of coming to the end of my emotions. After I do an hour of this, it's pretty amazing.
Good morning. How are you doing? Cold today or not? I'm good. I went to bed late, so I'm sleepy. But I said I'm going to get up and see who's your guest going to be at 8. So.
Yeah, I've been very cautious about this because it's Catherine Arnett, and we were talking yesterday. This show kind of came together yesterday afternoon. Because Catherine has been court-martialed once, maybe twice. I'm not sure. We're going to find out. She refused to take the COVID jab.
Mm-hmm.
I explained earlier that this mandate was basically illegal because they mandated soldiers to take an experimental drug. So we all know that. So, but the process is still ongoing. And so I don't want to jeopardize her or her case. But if she wants to tell a story,
yes.
I want to provide her the opportunity to do so. So this is why I've been kind of cagey about it.
Yeah.
And so we'll see how it goes. Jonathan's going to join us at the top of the hour, as he always does. Dorothy, I'm not sure. We're going to sort of see what's happening. She had wanted someone else to kind of join us. We might want to do that another time. But this is too important. Anyway,
sure.
Let me get your thoughts on Memorial Day. And just go ahead.
Well, Memorial Day, to me, being from another country, it's for the men and women that die for us, and we have to remember them. It's not about getting drunk, go to the beach, have a blast. You know, people really seriously, to me. I mean, it's nice to go to the beach with your family because you have your day off, but it's like, oh, happy memorial. It's not a happy memorial to me. It's sad times, you know. Of course, we have to continue life. But to me, I'm so thankful that they gave their lives for us to be free. And our freedom, they've been trying to take it away from us. And what I see.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Well, as I said, this is the important point. And like I say, at the risk of being controversial, there are more ways to fight for freedom. And I don't want to isolate the fight for freedom as much as we should and must honor those who have fallen, who have given their lives for this free country. This free country is rapidly not becoming a free country. So the real fight for our freedom is right here. That's what you and I do, and what millions of people across the country are doing. And that's not going to be recognized in the same way. There's not going to be a Patriot Civilian Day. Because it's not the same thing.
But,
now if we need it, you know, I'll just take the freedom. I don't need the war. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but now that I know a lot, this corrupt system, they've been creating the wars. So a lot of our young people really has murder for us. They think they're going to fight for us, but it's true. But these people have been orchestrated all the wars, this party of criminals that we have in our system from way back. They have done it all. And a lot of stuff will eventually come out, all the truth, the real truth about everything. And I'm waiting for that day. I have a 92-year-old woman. She's a family of my mother-in-law. And I talk to her every week because she really doesn't have a lot of friends to talk to, you know. Most of them are very old. And so I'm not 90. I'm 64. So she has a good time with me. And she says, I want to be alive. I want to make sure I'm here when everything gets released. I can hardly wait. And she tells me that every week. I'm living for that day, she goes. I said, well, you better hang on, you know. So I hope and pray that everything gets released And it will be a sad, sad day when a lot of family members find out that their loved ones die because they will organize the whole thing, you know.
So
it's just corrupt, corrupt.
Well, the real battle is to fight to not have the war in the first place. I mean, that to me is the real battle.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we do, you know, especially when you realize the extent of the military-industrial complex of just how bad these things mm-hmm. get. In fact, we just had, Catherine was on the line. So, you know, I had her on the board.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to give her the number again. So we're kind of doing, this is where I need a producer. And so I just have to give her my number.
Okay.
It's live radio. I can do anything. There she is again. Nope, that's a different number. That's Jonathan. So let's bring Jonathan in the conversation here, and we're just waiting on Catherine to get back to us. She should call any second now. So Jonathan, welcome to our very interesting Memorial Day live show. Did you get a chance to hear any of the poetry I've been reading the last hour?
No, sorry.
Okay.
I've been fairly sick here, but
oh no. Well, at least you're here. I appreciate that.
Yeah. It's apparently, according to your home test, it's not COVID. It's probably some rare tropical disease for which there's no cure. No, I'm just teasing.
No, they're spraying. That's why a lot of people are getting sick.
We're going to talk about that. Yeah. Go ahead. I got Catherine on the line now.
The reason I say that is that we forget the days when there were just colds, you know, everything. When people got sick before COVID existed. Anyway.
Yeah, we just got sick. Remember we just got sick when we got sick and that was it?
Exactly. So
go ahead,
today's
Jonathan.
Memorial Day, and I don't want to, given our tendency to get distracted. So you're waiting for a call back?
She's already here on the line. I'm going to bring her on right now. Let me introduce you to Catherine Arnett. I'm going to make her line live now. So Catherine's a very special friend of mine, probably the bravest person I know. Court-martialed. I don't know where we are in the process now. And Catherine, I just want to give you, you know, my standard caution. Please don't say anything that you think in any way, you know, might jeopardize your current situation. But as much as you want to tell, I want to hear. And I think everybody should hear. And I'll be sending this probably to certainly my congressman, Matt Gaetz, and who knows who else. And then we can talk about that after the show too. But Catherine, why don't you come on back and introduce yourself once again. And I'm just going to turn it over to you. You can explain as much as you want and take all the time you want. And let me just give you my customary round of applause right here. So that's for you. So millions
hey,
of people
glory,
behind you,
glory to God.
Even if you can't
all,
see them.
All the praise
go ahead,
glory
Jesse.
To God. Thank you so much, Greg. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm sorry I interrupted you there. That was Josie talking for a second. Yeah, go ahead. It's all yours.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it'd probably be better with, like, some questions just because, you know, the military definitely put me in jail so I wouldn't have media access or, like, you know, spiritual or community support. So, you know, if there's something I can't answer, I could definitely politely decline. But maybe some questions would help, like.
Okay. Well, let me tell you, you're among friends
would help,
here.
Start it first.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. No, you've got friends here, first of all. And so Jonathan has worked.
Hi, friends.
Jonathan's work with
Good morning.
Just introduce my group. So Jonathan's work with January 6th people. In fact, we even had Stuart Rhodes, who was is the head of the Oath Keepers, who just got convicted unjustly for 18 years for what they're calling seditious conspiracy, which is ironic because the people who convicted him actually stole the government, which is a seditious conspiracy. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like the people that ordered you to take an experimental COVID jab when they can't order you to take experimental COVID jabs because you can't take experimental medicine. And so then we got Josie here, who's originally from Nicaragua. Josie's known me the longest, goes back to my WEBY days, and has been fighting for freedom her whole life. And so those are the two folks I'm with you. I've invited also, and I don't think we'll get him today, but we'll get him sometime, Roger Roots, who defended the Bundys And he was the one that defended Stuart Rhodes. So I'm just going to go around the panel here. So my first question is, when you first heard about the COVID jab, how did it all get started?
Yeah.
How did you refuse this? Let's start there. What happened?
Yeah, so I would probably, I think I'm going to have to start with March of 2021.
Okay.
Aboard MCAS Iwakuni, they corralled everyone into one of the gyms there. And they're like, stand here, stand there, go sign this, go answer this question, go talk to this doctor. And it was basically like vetting us. It was like, who's going to get the vaccine? Who's not going to get the vaccine? Who do we need to kind of, you know, start pushing or grilling or, you know, just hounding to get it? And it wasn't mandatory back then. Mm-hmm. But it was basically foreshadowing the fact that it's on its way, get ready. So myself and the other people who knew they weren't going to get it, we kind of started gathering together, rallying for support. And then, of course, August of 2021 comes around, and September, the following month, it's then implemented and mandated aboard the base. Right. And for six
Where's
months,
base?
It was just like
Which base are we talking about? Or yeah. Where were you?
Marine Corps Air Station Iwakuni.
Where's that?
In Japan, sir. Sorry.
Okay. That's all right. No problem. So you know. I want to make sure everybody else does, too. In fact, Catherine called us from Japan
absolutely.
The first time on the Skype line. Yeah, so
mainland Japan, about an hour southwest flight of Tokyo. Really cute little quaint town. But
what was
it
the
was
mission
a bunch
there?
Of...
what do we have a base in Iwakuni, Japan for? What is that you can tell me, of course. What were they doing there? What were y'all doing there?
It's about a 30-minute drive from Hiroshima.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of American bases. There's like, you know, the Navy bases with Sasebo and everything. But no, it's an air station. So.
Okay. Yeah. Just curious. All right.
There's a lot. There's a lot spread out in Japan, and of course Okinawa is the most heavily populated American bases there, but.
Yeah, well, I can look those up and then we can talk about that sometime. So actually, we should start even further back. I got a couple questions, and I'll turn it over to our group here. Why the Marines?
Absolutely.
What was it about? How'd you pick them?
The legacy of the Marines really, really attracted me. Just the mystique. First of all, the mystique of female drill instructors was just so attractive and so alluring. And I know a lot of people think I'm crazy for saying this after all the hell that I've been through, but I still want to reenlist and I still want to complete my dream of being a drill instructor. So,
well, don't give up on it. Listen, I didn't find a job I liked till I was 57. So don't worry about it. You know, there's time.
Absolutely.
Keep going.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah,
so the only question
I just
got
to get through this second. Yeah. I just got to get through this second round of court martial.
How many people can say that on the planet? I have my second round of court martial. You're such a badass. I mean, you really are. I mean, I completely respect you and everything you're doing. And I'm, you know, this show, if the government or anybody tells you you can't have media access, call me immediately. I'll give you media access. Not a problem. I happen to know some senior folks in the Trump administration, the previous one, and they're going to get this too.
Yeah.
So you can leave a message for anybody you want, as far as I'm concerned. So just
yes, sir.
One quick question.
Do.
Okay. Oh, call me Greg, please. We're friends. How many other folks were there? There you go. How many other folks were there at the time who didn't want the jab? And I'm just curious, did they change their mind? Because they seem to have picked on you as the target, as the example.
Absolutely. It was definitely because I started talking to Sons of Liberty and RFK last year.
Okay.
There's a handful left aboard MCAS Iwakuni that have not gotten the jab and that are rocking and rolling, in the words of one of my senior leaders. He gave me the metrics. He had the gall to give me the metrics of other Marines who are doing well. And he was like, and then there's you. And mind you, this was a day before I went to jail. So he was laying down the metrics, almost like taunting me. It was hilarious. But
what happened to the others?
He left. And what was that?
Go ahead.
Well, I don't know what the right order is in which to tell the story, but it just occurs to me, from your perspective, and again, being careful what you can say, how can you be court-martialed twice? That doesn't, I mean, now, I'm not saying that you're going to give a legal brief or explain the government's thinking, but do you have any just general summary of how that's possible?
Yes, absolutely. Who asked the question?
That's Jonathan. Jonathan, you want to introduce yourself? Why don't you give your background
Johnson.
Real quick?
Hi, Jonathan.
Yeah.
So, go ahead. I think I said,
Jonathan, you want to just give your background real quick? And
I've been an attorney since the 1990s and worked with Larry Klayman and defended mm-hmm. a lot of January 6th defendants. I'm still working on them, which, you know, again, is not... is all about, you know, the rights of due process. And, it's not necessarily to defend everything that everybody did, but to make sure that due process, you know, continues and remains alive in our country, which I think is a serious question. So so that's part of my interest there. So go ahead. I want to take up your time.
Absolutely. Thank you for your work, Jonathan, and thank you for the question. So the first court martial ended up getting rescinded. The charges were withdrawn in September of 2022 because my lawyer at the time made a motion to abate the entire thing. It went through.
What's that for us non-lawyers? What's a motion to abate?
So abatement means to... I can't give you a dictionary definition, unfortunately, at this time, but...
Jonathan?
But
abatement, let's ask our expert. Yeah.
Jonathan? Abatement means
to abate normally means to pause, but it's actually used in this context to mean to vacate.
Yes, absolutely. So the motion went through, and the judge essentially saw that my two charges from last year were in fact COVID sphere and inside the COVID sphere. It was kept pretty general, but the judge saw that and my lawyer was able to show the linear connections and he did a great job because, well, it ended up getting abated and the charges were withdrawn by the people who pressed them to me. So
do you still have the same person? I don't want names, but do you have the same attorney to help with this case? Because it seems like they did a great job the first time. Oh, that's too bad.
I do not, Greg. No.
Oh.
But long story short, and fast forward a few months, essentially due to the fact that I wrote a request mass, which is like formal paperwork from an enlisted to the commanding officer. I wrote them basically kind of Larry Birding them and said, look, these charges are going to be withdrawn eventually, but can y'all just like retain me on legal hold? And, you know, obviously they pressed the charges to me, but they showed their cards and it looked like they were serious about going through with the proceedings. And so whenever they got withdrawn, because I was correct and I told them how it would basically go, mm-hmm. and they did nothing really to help, they were mad once they got withdrawn. So they, for months, started scrutinizing everything I did, making things harder for me, and basically stacking up charges purposely, vindictively, to corner me and finally just throw me in the brig. It took months of painstaking process on their part, but that's how two court martials happen. The first one got withdrawn, and this one, they just egregiously, heinously, vindictively piled five charges on me.
Can you tell us what those were? Can you tell us? I'm just curious.
Sure, absolutely. So the first one is Article 86. I think that would be unauthorized absence. The second one is Article 87, missing movement. The third one is Article 87, Bravo. Failure to go to appointed place of duty or something. Oh, no, breach of restriction. Article 90, insubordination, and Article 91, disrespect. So a bunch of frivolous charges that would not even, if all of them were found guilty, you wouldn't even warrant. Would not even warrant 113 days in jail altogether.
They charge you with disrespect? That seems insane.
Yes.
let me get Josie in the conversation here. We're going to go over these in a little bit, but this is fascinating. Josie, do you want to talk to Catherine?
Yeah. Hi, Josie.
Hello. Hey, we're a military family. My husband retired 26 years Air mm-hmm. Force, and thank God he's out, so he wasn't forced to get the shots. My son-in-law, he was forced to get both shots, and mm-hmm. now they've been telling him he has to get the boosters. Till this day, they're insisting he needs to get the booster, so he's getting out.
Yeah,
they're moving back from Michigan. They're moving back from Michigan the middle of this month back home here. Praise God.
Mm-hmm.
But let me tell you,
yeah.
I can hardly wait to see all the arrests of all these leaders in the military, and they will be arrested. Trust my words. They will be arrested. And anybody that it was discharged for, they are going to be rewarded. That's what we were mm-hmm. told on our last event privately. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to big people over there. So, in an event that we had in Miami with a lot of doctors, Mike Flynn, Gene Ho, a lot of Roger Stone was with us.
Mm.
So this abuse, this killing of humanity, actually, of these shots, because the shots are killer shots. They're not just regular vaccines that they're going to give you autism, schizophrenia, mm-hmm. bipolar. This is deadly. This is totally different. This is a bioweapon that they've been using, and Greg was one of the first one on Action Radio really reporting about this right at the beginning.
We started back in 2020.
He had COVID in 2019. Yeah.
Yeah, so, the end of 2019.
But,
I'm going to ask you something because we got a real special guest who just joined us, so I'm going to let you but yeah, we were the first ones out with this. March 2nd, I broadcast mm-hmm. that the government response is a hoax, mm-hmm. that COVID is curable. We had the report from Didier Raoult in Marseille, France. We were way, way ahead, I think, of virtually everybody on this. I got a special guest. I got Neil McCabe of One American News is on the line right now, and he wants to talk to you as well. In fact, he did a report on you, but I don't think he ever talked to you. So Neil McCabe, meet Catherine Arnett.
Catherine, it's really a pleasure. I'm glad that you're still amongst the living and have the freedom to speak. And I hope you're doing well. It's really an honor to meet you.
Hi, Neil. Thank you so much, and God bless. An honor to meet you as well, sir.
Yeah,
go ahead, Neil.
It's a very difficult situation that you're in, and I don't think that. People really appreciate the extreme pressure that service members feel to comply normally, because you're trained to obey orders, you're programmed to obey orders, because that's the only way they function. You know, it's the old saying, you know, the soldier who thinks is dead. And so, you know, you fight like you train, and
mm-hmm.
and then just to put on top of that the fact that you were overseas, which means really your only link to normalcy is mm-hmm. is the Marines, because everything around you is another country.
Yes.
So why you, Catherine? How did you have the gumption to challenge this? And I'm wondering if you being Christian had something to do with it, that you were being picked on. As opposed to others who didn't refuse the jab and didn't have the same level of persecution that you have. So how did you first decide to refuse this? And then what happened? I'm curious.
I have to give firstly my strength and courage and gumption, as you said, ultimately to God. And secondly, literally, I kid you not, to the Marine Corps. They trained me to... Kind of a caveat, but before September of 2021, whenever all of this stuff came out, I had a perfectly clean record. I loved going to work. I loved doing my job, you know, yes sir, no sir, all that stuff, falling in line and everything. Now, whenever this illegal mandate came out, I had, you know, the training to stand up to what is right and wrong, basically. The Marine Corps instilled that mindset in me to have the literal courage in their slogan, you know, honor, courage, commitment. There I sound like a boot or, you know, just kind of a motto, you know, a broken record, but it was literally the Marine Corps. And it's crazy that they come after the product of themselves after it all. The Marine Corps, I think, is the only one who can instill the mindset in a young man or woman, a woman in my case, to literally want to endure court-martial and even jail to hopefully get back and literally just get back to her job. I don't know if that answered the question. Sometimes I go on tangents, but
no, please go on tangents. We're pretty free form here, so whatever you want to say is fine with me.
It was the Marine Corps. They're the ones who gave me strength and courage, and I realized, wow, I'm gonna have to, you know, stand up for what's right in this. So I would credit the Marine Corps for that gumption that they instilled in me, because if I were probably in the civilian world, I don't know, I can't say where I would be. I'm sure God would have manifested and shown himself in other ways, in his mysterious ways. But
yeah,
it was definitely the rigorous training of the Marine Corps, and yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah, yeah. Neil?
No, I think that's I guess that's the definition of irony. But, you know, it's, when you talk about this illegal vaccine, you know, it's like, it's not so much, you know, Greg and Catherine, when you dig into, you know, the science of the vaccine or what they told us about the vaccine and all of the tests that were done and not done and the results that were maybe pencil whipped, you also have to look into how, when they came out with the vaccine and the orders, the way they massaged the words and to protect themselves, and they hedged and they wrote this, but they really meant that. And so, you know, the whole time, you know, the military leadership, civilian and military, they knew that this thing was a problem, and mm-hmm. and they protected themselves. And, you know, I'm a public affairs sergeant in the Army Reserve. I deployed to Kuwait in 2021, and you know, I took pictures of people getting the vaccine, and I interviewed people getting the vaccine, and you know, I interviewed the Central Command microbiologist who told me things that, you know, now I know weren't true. But you know, you just think about the reason. It's almost like they knew something was up. And, you know, when I think back, and, you know, they showed all these generals, you know, getting the vaccine to tell everybody how safe it was. And I took pictures of generals getting the vaccine. You know, now I wonder if they were just given sugar water. You know, it's like,
though, that's a huge one. Oh yeah. I want to know that too.
Yeah.
I think all of us
do.
I mean, why would you suspect that?
I honestly think this.
Okay.
Well, it's funny when you hear about all these people who are vaccinated coming down with COVID, right? And they say, oh, this guy was – and they put out a statement that says, well, you know, I came down with COVID, but I'm so grateful that I got 2 shots and 6 boosters because that made the symptoms much less. And I'm like, wait, where is this Chinese wall against the vaccine, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, here's
and
the thing.
All of these big, powerful people who keep coming down with COVID after being boosted. But I think that we're going to find out that people knew a lot more than they did. And I think it's obviously it's coming out now. And you know, it's like this, you know, but I think that when you look into the people are digging into the science, but I mm-hmm. think it's also important that people dig into like the legalese and the memos and how the leadership protected themselves because they knew in their heart of hearts that this thing was a problem. And you know, it's, you know, when I think about what Catherine's going through, it's not just Catherine, it's her family, it's her comrades, it's everyone associated with her, because they have to, it's like they have to put her on the whipping post as an example to others. And for what?
Yeah.
For what? You know, it's John Kerry, who's not necessarily a hero of mine, but you know, he had that great line towards the end of the Vietnam War, where he testified and he says, you know, how do you ask the young American to be, you know, to be the last man to die for a mistake? And with COVID, it's like, how do you ask someone to be the, you know, to be the last person to fall for this vaccine before everybody just says whatever? I'll make two other points, because I know this is really Catherine's program, and people want to hear from her. Is that, Greg, are you familiar with how many Army National Guardsmen were discharged for not taking the vaccine?
No, I've been looking into the science of it, like you said before. We had, I'll tell you about our world's greatest doctors panel with, like, Dr. Judy Mikovits and a bunch of others.
Zero.
So we know that the – really? Oh, wait a minute. Okay. Jump right in. Tell me again. Why? Zero.
How many Air Force National Guardsmen were discharged for not taking the vaccine? 70.
Okay. So what other numbers do you have?
Because politically now in the Army Reserve, and you know, obviously in the reserve and the active duty, it was a different story.
Huh.
But in the National Guard and the Air National Guard, the governors were able to slow roll it. Now, they slow rolled it for different reasons. The first reason was the politics, because they were closer to the people and they were hearing all the hate and discontent. Second reason is that states get their allotment for their National Guard budgets on October 1st. And so why would I deliberately make my force smaller when I'm getting all my money in October? So, you know, there's other things going on. But it just tells you the functioning of democracy, right? We don't like democracy because we're nice people and we want to have a nice system. We have democracy because we think it works the best. It just creates the best results because your government is lined up with your people, and we figure, well, if your government's lined up with your people, that works better than having like a king or a dictatorship. It's not because we're particularly nice and we just want a sweet government. We just want a good country. And so you can see the effect of democracy on the vaccine mandate, because you have guys like in Oklahoma, Governor Stitt, who basically gave the order and he said, there will be no separation boards in Oklahoma. And he said, I don't care. Or the governor of Alabama wrote to Biden and she said, why are we doing this when we know this mandate's going to be lifted and all you're going to do is destroy people's livelihood? But there it is. I just want to make – and so you see
this is fascinating.
What's happening to Catherine. It's like, and you see what happened in the National Guard. We're supposed to be a country of laws where there's one law for everybody. There's supposed to be one UCMJ for everybody. Apparently, there's not.
You know, if the government were that benevolent, Neil, I wouldn't have had to create Action Radio. So this is why we're here, is to write the laws we consent to be governed. What's that, keep me off the streets? No, you know, I just listen.
Keeps you off the streets, like midnight basketball.
Wait, I hit the streets of Washington. Catherine, do you have any friends? I mean, is anybody in Congress helping you? Is any government agency? Could you even go to a National Guard and transfer or something like that and be a drill instructor there? I mean, who's helping you that you can tell us?
I have written some congressional inquiries to Ted Cruz. Those are December, January, and April. I believe some good came of that.
Okay.
As far as transferring, I really, if push comes to shove and you know they end up escorting me off base and dumping me off the base with a unsigned DD-214 and without my CAT card, I don't have any desire to transfer or go to another branch. It was the Marines or bust. I want to be a drill instructor for the Marines. I really do.
Okay, well, stick with it then. And this is, you know, like I say, we've got another administration coming up. You know, I have a lot of hope in the Trump administration. In fact, I hope to pass this on. Now, Neil, you've interviewed a couple of my friends, Matt Gaetz, Congressman I'm in Matt Gaetz's district, and David Trombley. You know, you did a whole COVID special. So should we contact Matt Gaetz about this? You know, I don't know if you don't want to, I know you, as a journalist, you can't do politics, but I'm not a journalist, so I don't care. This show's for activists. We're lobbyists here. We're you know, firmly in the patriot camp. Is that something that can we give more coverage to this?
I'm a reporter now. One day, I hope to be aspire to journalism. But I think that what happens when you're dealing with members of Congress, whether it's congressmen or senators, is they get really jealous, and so you have to sort of pick one and focus on them. And I think it's difficult to deal with senators, especially a senator from Texas, which is like the second or third largest state in the country, because it's just a monstrous thing. There's what, 20 million people or something in Texas. I've written to her. I've emailed her congressman, and I'll be following up on that. I just think that Catherine also. Is it true that you're getting help from the Pipe Hitter Foundation?
Is this something you want
to
comment on or not? Yeah.
I have to decline to comment on that for right now.
Okay. Well, I know I know people at the Pipe Hitter Foundation are rooting for you, and I don't know what your relationship is with them. I just know that they're fans of yours, and what happens is when you get involved with a civilian judge, you tend to see action, and I've seen this with other. One of the stories was you talked about my COVID-19 special I did for One American News. I also did one on the Pentagon's War on Warriors, where we looked at the case of Eddie Gallagher and Clint Lawrence and other people who were sort of being targeted for doing their job. It's a very funny thing that happens where, they're able to sort of do a shimmy shake in the military court system, but when you get in front of a civilian judge, the civilian judges aren't always willing to play those games. And so I think that there's cause for legal action on the civilian side, but I don't want to practice law without a license.
Well, I want to ask Jonathan those questions because he does practice law. So let's see if we can bring him back. Oh, sorry, Neil, I just want to jump in here for a second. Jonathan?
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So for Catherine, is there help for her civilian wise? Because now, just to let folks know, Jonathan, like I said, has worked with Larry Klayman, who started Judicial Watch. Jonathan's defended January 6 people. And like I say, we even had Stuart Rhodes call us from the Oklahoma Federal Prison. So Jonathan's no stranger to any of this. And I think that probably get Jonathan and Catherine together. Sir, go ahead.
There are good judges and bad judges. And I don't know off the top of my head whether the fight to have jurisdiction in the state court, what the status would be of all the details. Normally there would be a question about whether or not the state court has jurisdiction over something that maybe arises within the military. But there are, some judges, if a judge gets involved, they're going to be more careful and more methodical than, say, a military judge who's free to do, whatever they want according to what
Well, don't
they
have the same constitution? I mean, is it that, I'm just wondering about this. Do the military people
no,
have the same constitutional rights? How does that work?
Well, yes. I mean, there are layers here. So okay. Constitutional rights, yes, are all through our government and our country, but unfortunately our system does have the idea that when one is in service or signs up, that they have fewer rights on the idea that they've, voluntarily surrendered them. It's somewhat like if you go out on the street corner and want to protest, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you work in a federal agency and you want to, give a speech in the middle of the office, it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
But it is true that a good judge who gets involved is going to be more methodical and careful and precise, hopefully, about all those things. So it's worth, I mean, because here you have an overlap, not just of, well, if they're trying to fake up things that are purely within the military, that's one thing. But if you're going to assert fundamental constitutional rights, then it shouldn't matter if it's military or non-military. But you know, the government won't agree. They'll try to fight that.
Well, the government's doing some pretty horrendous things right now.
I think the legal point.
Yeah, Neil, go ahead.
I think the legal stuff comes in when you ask, when you can present to the judge and say that, you know, that the Constitution was not present here. Its spirit was not present here. And, and all that needs to be resolved. But I think, maybe that's a discussion for another day.
Retaliation for asserting your constitutional rights is a constitutional issue. If you see what I mean, you know, if
that's
one thing, if they're denying your constitutional rights, but there's also a very strong legal concept of retaliation. So it's you know, like everything else in the law, there's nothing simple about it, but it's worth exploring.
Yeah. Well, let's get Catherine back in here. Catherine, is any of this news to you? Have you been advised of your constitutional rights as both a civilian and a military person? What can you tell us what you've been told about this whole process?
I can say yes, I have been advised of my rights. As far as being familiar with the paradox, yes, I'm quite familiar with the paradox of it and how maddening it is at times. I think that's all I'm probably at liberty to say right now about my what I've been advised, like in the courtroom and everything. So.
Okay. Yeah, we keep the caution that, like I said, don't get yourself into trouble here. I don't want to do that, but I want to give you full access to say whatever you want to. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to say thank y'all for talking too. I love to hear y'all talk as well. It's nice to be back in the company of patriots and then true supporters to the cause.
We are glad to have you. You're welcome anytime. You know, you got a standing invitation.
Yeah,
you can always call my show. Yeah.
Yeah, it does not have to be just me talking all the time, really. And you know, sometimes I trail off and tangent off. So to hear y'all talk about focused and poignant facts is very nice to hear. So.
Oh, well, thank you. So do you have any insights for people how they can fight back? Because you're not the only one fighting this. I'm sure the other people in the military, I know David Tromley, when he was on, was telling us stories. We've had Captain Tom Peters on. We've had various veterans at different times, places, different services. And it's all the same thing that's, you know, and I remember this going back to the anthrax vaccine and Gulf War syndrome. Mm-hmm. This is where I first got really interested in this. And thinking these idiots are doing it again. Let me ask you a quick question here. Did they ever test anybody for immunity before giving the shots? Immunity to COVID.
In my immediate awareness on the base, no, I'm not aware of that. I can't say if people went to request immunity, but it was never a mandated thing. It was never an advertised thing, if that makes sense.
No, I mean testing. In other words, people who had COVID already are immune. I had COVID, I'm sure. I mean, I never got officially tested, but I don't trust the test. But as Josie was saying earlier, end of December, beginning of January, January 2020, I sounded horrible. I had the worst cough I've ever had in my life. You know, and a couple of weeks later, it was gone. That was my COVID. And I figured, okay, I'm immune. I don't have to do this anymore. So the military, the youngest, healthiest, strongest people in the country, the most patriotic, the most driven, the most mentally aware of what's going on in life and everything because of what you do, why were you not tested for COVID immunity before the shot was given?
Yeah.
And I'll ask Jonathan and Neil the same question. Well, let me get your opinion on that first. Did anybody mention, we're going to see, we got the COVID jab for those that want it, unless you're immune, in which case you don't need it. Was that ever even a thought? Or was it just give the jab?
It was not a thought. It was just get the jab. It's coming. And this is a lawful order. And everyone pile into the gym. There was a event called a shot X, I suppose, like a shot exposition or something. But it's basically like, all right, get the shot or go to the legal table all the way in the back of the gym.
Oh wow.
And it was all of the deliberate
craftiness of subterfuge is, now I have to preface, it's wicked brilliance, but
yeah.
Everyone, I would say the you know, the top leaders, you know, they know what's going on. They know
mm-hmm.
how to, you know, confound, or if that's not the right word, hoodwink your, you know, probably younger military members and shit, the whole force, you know, almost the whole force at this point. So hoodwink the whole force to get the dang thing. But yeah, no, it was really interesting.
Jesse?
Can I say,
sure.
Can I say my son-in-law, the military told him, if you take just one shot, you don't
yep.
have to wear that mask anymore, because he really hated to be wearing that mask
mm-hmm.
while they were flying.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Coast Guard rescue. And he was so happy. He says, oh, God, thank God, I don't have to wear that mask anymore. And guess what? They forced him to take the second shot. And
mm-hmm.
that's, like I said earlier, he will not take any boosters, and that's why he's leaving the military. And it's
wow.
sad how this corrupt corporation that we live under, government, communists, they are forcing our young kids. And some of the young kids I talked to them all, I was trying to reach them not to take the vaccine. They said, we don't have any choice. They own us. My tears just came out of my eyes. Like, they
mm-hmm.
own us like a pet, you know. It's sad. But they're going to pay. They're all going to pay, and I can hardly wait to see that day.
Yeah. Jesse's from Nicaragua and grew up under some pretty horrendous circumstances for
communism.
From communism, yeah, for many folks to the show. Jonathan, where do we go from here? Can you help Catherine? Is there you guys can talk off the show, of course, but you know, can we bring some of the same folks that are working with J6 to help her? What do you think?
Well, I mean, the thing with the J6 legal teams is they're completely overwhelmed.
Okay. Yeah, that's not surprised.
I do have a suggestion. We could talk offline or something, but
sure.
I mean, it sounds like she's well on her way. Obviously, I think people need to perhaps support her legal defense fund, because I know...
Is there a site for that, Catherine? Let's just get that out right now. We'll give it at the end of our chat, too.
Yeah, again, I'm going to have to decline on commenting on that.
Right.
But, yeah, we can definitely talk about it off there, sir. Greg.
Okay. Yeah, I'm Greg. Neil and Jonathan are still sir, and Josie's ma'am, but I'm just Greg. So I'm trying to keep it pretty casual here. Where do you stand now, Catherine? So what are you facing next that you can talk about, what are you being told? You know, like I say, again, be careful, but I'm just curious as to what the procedure is, and when do you think it's going to be over? Where are we trying for here?
Yeah, I'm pretty hesitant on commenting about what's next in this whole court-martial process.
Okay.
I have a hearing
on
June 5th. Yeah, the only thing I can say, I have a hearing on June 5th. Trial dates are tentatively at the end of summer, early fall. But I'm hesitant on saying anything more about the judicial process. I'm absolutely free to comment on anything else.
Okay. Well, that sounds
good.
Well, let me ask you something different. You mentioned RFK, Robert Francis Kennedy Jr.,
yeah.
who's running for president. And the reason that this is really significant is because one of our regular folks and a friend of mine, Dr. Judy Mikovits, probably the world's greatest molecular biologist right now, who was arrested by Dr. Fascist, as I call him. We got to get Catherine back. Her line dropped. We got to text her to come back. Anyway, now I lost my train of thought. I lose my star guest. I'm like, what happened here? Anyway, so hopefully she'll come right back. But, you know, Dr. Mikovits is connected to Robert Francis Kennedy because, you know, there she is again. Well, I'll just start over.
Hi, sorry.
Was that
the
FBI?
Dropped.
What do you think? Yeah. Oh, it's just called.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. Our agent, or at this point, I'm sure I have multiple agents, but, you know, whatever. Hi.
I'm sure they listen to us, too. Like I say, I'll give my standard invitation for the FBI, KGB to, you know, call in. And you want to talk to us, be like normal people, 215-383-3832. But we get weird things happening on the show every once in a while. I do. It's like, you know, you can't be afraid of these people. And if I get arrested, I get arrested.
No.
And if they come busting my doors down, you know, God help him, because I'm going to be sarcastic as hell. And, you know, it's just, and I'm taking an example from you. If you can fight him, I can fight him. You know, if anybody can fight them, you just, go ahead. Yeah. Anyway, but I was curious about RFK because, again, Judy Mikovits, who tells us more about COVID than we could possibly want to know. It's like a biochemistry lesson when she gets on the show. But RFK wrote the foreword to her book, and he has our vaccine product liability bill. And so I'm just hoping he'll endorse it. But there's a ton of work being done with that. Any insights on RFK? And is he helping you out at all, or what's the connection that you can tell us?
So last year, yes, he's absolutely helping. Last year, I did an interview with Children's Health Defense and Stephanie Locriccio, and she got me, or she or one of her team members of Children's Health Defense, which is affiliated with RFK, got me in touch with RFK to do an interview with him, and it was wonderful seeing him over the computer and having an interview with him. And then today, actually, I will be seeing him as well. He's here in the San Diego area. He heard I was in the San Diego area, so I'll be
breaking news
today.
Hey, isn't One American News in the San Diego area, Neil?
Yes, they are. Oh, I'm sorry, I interrupted. I heard they are.
Didn't sound like Neil. can drop-ins go there, Neil? What's the story? Can we get Catherine over to One American News, maybe?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I also want to say
that was easy.
I spent 8 years on active duty in the Coast Guard, and all Coast Guardsmen are raised and trained with a reverence for Marines, especially because the only Guardsman, National Guard, the only Coast Guardsman to get the Medal of Honor was Douglas Monroe, who was awarded that posthumously after he saved 500 Marines on Guadalcanal. And whenever a Marine would mention Douglas Monroe to you, you know, when you're in the Coast Guard, you just sort of start beaming because of this connection. And it's this weird thing, you know, whereas Marines and the Coast Guard, you know, they both have this awkward relationship with the Navy, and you're there, but you're kind of not there. And I also want to tell Catherine that I may want to contact you offline just to help me out with DTS, because
what's that?
DTS,
you got it.
Is,
you got that it, is sir. Say less. Y'all have no idea how much of a joy it would be just to do DTS. Oh goodness, yes.
Okay, help us out. What are
DTS
you talking about?
That is the online travel claim system that. Some madman clown, maybe the same lab in Wuhan that led to all this problem, that designed a system called DTS.
Okay, what is it? Where's the punchline?
It's basically it's the military system for doing your travel voucher whenever you travel outside of your base for business travel.
Okay.
And that's what I did. I just have to put in a plug. That's what I did for 2.5 years. And that's the job that I love. And that's the job that I want to get back to. And I know it's an uphill battle, but I can't tell you how much I loved servicing my Marines and helping them out. And that's why I fight so hard. So.
People must have come to you in tears, Catherine.
Almost borderline.
The Marines don't cry, right?
No, of course not.
Oh, yes, yeah.
I was definitely sought out the most. I was traveling to pick up people from their port sites in Japan. I was volunteering my time. I was staying up till 3 a.m., you know, helping Marines get back for bereavement. It was a blast. I can't express how much I loved what I did, and I still do.
Yeah. Also, Catherine. Well, you know, I don't have time. I have left.
Oh, I got another hour after this. You guys are welcome to stay the following hour if you want. I got plenty of time. So yeah, go ahead. Take all the time you want, Neil.
Catherine.
Yes.
Given that this is, you know, this is the Memorial Day and the Memorial Day weekend, could you just talk about what it was like to be around, you know, Okinawa, places where so many Marines gave their lives, you know, for the flag that flies over all of us?
Irony. Someone, I think one of y'all said it earlier, irony But with that, surrounded by that legacy that I had talked about at the beginning, just the legacy of the Marine Corps, knowing that, you know, sometimes things happen within the bureaucracy, but that legacy still stays strong and mysterious and alluring as ever. And especially, and that was in Okinawa, right, when I was in the brig. I never lost hope. But, yeah, especially this Memorial Day weekend, dare I bring this up? I went
This is the show. Of course you bring it up, Catherine.
No.
This
but,
is us.
Hear me out. You, me, our circle here and our listeners understand it, but it's still probably a taboo topic just to talk about to, like, you know, your normal, well, unnormal, you know, an average military supporter who may or may not have, you know, knowledge of the bureaucracy, right? So hear me out. Mm-hmm. At Chick-fil-A,
sure,
there was a Memorial Day table commemorating the prisoners of war and the missing in action. And there was also a Salute Our Heroes thing at mm-hmm. the Mission San Juan Capistrano that I visited yesterday. And it's so nice to see that people are still putting out the flags and honoring those. But I don't think I'm censored to say that, you know, the bureaucracy held me as a, I'll say political prisoner. I don't want to say prisoner of war. I feel like that's, they held me as a political prisoner for 4 months because I, you know, I stood up about the vaccine. And so it was hard. Like, one of the guys who saw me looking at the POW table, he was like, man, a really dark shadow crossed your face whenever you saw that. And of course, Marines don't cry, but maybe there was some moisture in my eyes. I guess irony is that a proper word to categorize it as? It was irony.
I see irony all over this. I think it's a perfect word for it.
Yeah, the irony is all over it. It was refreshing to see people celebrating it and supporting you know, the Memorial Day weekend. If that answers the question, Greg.
Yeah. No, it does. And like I say, you can answer any way you want. There's no set course of action here as far as it goes. In fact, a lot of folks might wonder why we're doing this on Memorial Day. You know, we're supposed to honor the fallen, mm-hmm. and I honor those who fought. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if people realize how much you're fighting and what you're doing. You're fighting well beyond yourself. Yes, you have a legal battle, and yes, you have a huge dispute with the Marines, and yes, you absolutely deserve your job back because you didn't do anything wrong. Here's the ultimate irony is you actually followed orders because the military cannot order you to take an experimental drug. And that's basically what the jab is. It's never been approved officially. Nobody knows what's in it. I don't even know if Pfizer, you know, concocts all this kind of stuff. But the idea that you basically follow the order which says you cannot take an experimental drug and yet you're being persecuted mm-hmm. and prosecuted for that, that's irony. So the irony that they never tested people for immunity, you know, the healthiest people in the country, that's irony.
Yep.
Irony that you're fighting for freedom in ways that, you know, it's not just the fallen. And God bless them for giving their lives for our country. Jonathan, go ahead.
Greg, I would think from my background, you know, don't talk about what you've done or you think or what you've done or not, because, you know, that would, you know, might not be good. But I was going to ask along the same lines, could you educate the audience about the, in general, what the military has taught, I guess, until recently about obeying lawful orders and what orders not to obey. You know, I remember back to the My Lai massacre and the idea that the idea that military always obey orders is just wrong. And there used to be a great concern that military realized that they're not supposed to obey just every order. Can you help out the listeners in terms of what standard teaching is?
Is that a question
about
from,
yourself?
That's Jonathan, right?
Yes. mm-hmm. without talking about yourself.
Is that a question for me, sir, or is that a question for Greg?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
No, that's for you, but don't talk about yourself. Talk about, you know, the standard military doctrine.
Sure. What I can remember, oh, that's right. You said, well, in general, I can't recall any stand down or training where it says, this is how you discern. This is how you discern between a lawful or an unlawful order. Everything is just kind of assumed as lawful and you do it. That is the way the military runs, to be fair, in the most part. But I think that this whole COVID thing has brought to light some spiritual aspects and spiritual components as well, that there should be scrutinization of certain things that either the military or any entity brings to the table and says, this will be followed. So yeah, as far as deliberate training or explicit guidelines to discern, you know, between an unlawful and a lawful order, I was never exposed to that, but I believe I was able to.
In the uproar after the Vietnam War, it would have been a time when everybody would have been taught that, and I do feel we've moved away from it. That, you know, whereas there was great paranoia about some of the things that happened in Vietnam and at other times, now it's like, mm-hmm. you know, just kneel before Zod. You know, you are, we're becoming too authoritarian, in my opinion.
Yeah. Let me just jump in here for a second. Neil, I think, has to leave pretty soon. So, Neil, did you want to get in the last comment or anything else?
Hey, Jonathan, first of all, I want to say great Superman 2 reference. That was very strong.
Of course.
That was a fantastic film, by the way, with Marlon Brando. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be on, and Catherine, I just want you to know that I've covered this at One American News. I'll continue to cover your case and other cases, and it's something that's very personal to me. And I think that, you know, you mentioned, you know, reaching out to Congress for your, or, you know, Senator Cruz for your own personal case, but, you know, Senator Tocqueville is putting a hold on a lot of promotions dealing with the Pentagon's abortion policy. There's also what senators can do in general just to get answers on COVID-19 and the vaccine and the mandate, is that there's roughly 50,000 military officers who are confirmed by the Senate every year. Just like a judge or a member of the cabinet, all military officers have to be confirmed by the Senate. And these 50,000 officers are done in batches, but it's all done by unanimous consent and nobody questions anything. Just to force a roll call vote on some of these colonels and generals and admirals, that would have a tremendous impact and getting people's attention. And so I just want to reach out to, you know, everybody listening, you know, that this is something that that the senators can do in general, not just the specific case. And to Catherine, I just want to just say how amazed and thrilled that I am to meet you and to know that there are Marines like you in the inventory. Gives me some hope for this country, and thank you, Greg, and for giving me this opportunity to sort of check in.
Oh, my pleasure. Listen, call anytime. You don't need an invitation, and you know I have your number, so just feel free. Anything of interest. We are a very open forum where anybody can talk to anybody. That's the whole point of it.
Fantastic. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Any One American News areas or places or contact or anything like that?
Well, I think. Many times people are asking me where to find One American News. I tell them go to the OANN.com where they can download the OAN Live app. And most of us watch stuff on our phones anyway, and so it's really not that big a transition to tell people to watch TV or news on their app like it might have been, say, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And so there's a free 7-day trial. If you love it and you get addicted like I do, then that's fantastic. If you don't love it, well, after 7 days, you move on. But I think people really appreciate the unbiased, honest reporting at One American News.
Yeah, I do. That's why I watch it. It's pretty simple. We just got to get you covering some of our citizen legislation. That's the next thing. We have a constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money that I hope you guys take a look at and study and maybe report on. That's my shameless plug. So I tend to do that a lot as well.
Right. Listen, we can work on that, sir.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, it's really glad to meet you. I'm really glad to talk to you here on the show. This is fabulous. So thank you for everything you do and keep doing what you do. You're kind of like the last, you know, media that actually reports, you know, things that isn't a left-wing propaganda. Even Newsmax has lost their way. So they're all falling under the deep state. It's really sad what's going on.
Yeah. All right. Take care, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Neil. You take care.
Take care.
Neil McCabe, One American News. Okay, so it's just us. We've got Josie, we've got Jonathan, we've got Catherine. And again, we can stick around. I mean, Dorothy was on the line for a bit, but I'm going to pick her up next week. This is not the right day for her report. And she had someone else that might be calling in too. So I'll talk to her about that. We'll get that all squared away. Catherine, what haven't we covered yet? And like I say, if you can stick around, you're welcome. We've got a whole other hour. So we're going to get a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I'd love to be.
Okay.
So what should we talk about? Someone asked me about like what can be done. I think someone had prefaced that before the Memorial Day question. But my answer is it's not too late to say it is not, because there'll be more boosters, there will be more questionable experimental medicine, you know, practices coming in. And this lovely girl at the library turned to me. I didn't know who she was, but she said, are you Arnett? And of course my face got red and I'm like, hi, yes, nice to meet you. Immediately connected. And she's like, you know, thank you for what you did. Like, I ended up getting the vaccine, but I should have said no. And I looked at her right in the eyes and I'm like, it's not too late. There's going to be more boosters. We need more people to say no and to take the brave stand. Imagine if just like, hell, 2%, 5%, 10% said no. That would be a big loss to the recruitment bottom line. And that'd be like, oh wow, you know, maybe we should back off of this. It's not too late to say no. Just, you know, be mentally prepared and spiritually prepared for the consequences. But that's my biggest thing. All the people who said, oh man, I wish I didn't get it. Okay, that's okay. That's okay. There's gonna be more opportunities to take a stand. That's really my plug, because I had asked a few of my unvaccinated friends to go down this road with me. I was like, hey man, they're not going to want two court martials. They're not going to want three or four court martials in the same base for the same reason. And they were the single Marines. I asked the single Marines. I can't imagine what it would be like right now to have a family in the COVID sphere. But God bless the families who have stayed strong through this. So I asked the single Marines, and they all said no. They took their benefits and they got out. But props to them. Props to them for not caving into the mandate. But long story short, it's not too late to say no.
Yeah, it's never too late. We have some interesting news from, like I said, Dr. Judy Mikovits, Brian Artis, and some other people, because they got incredibly well connected to some of the top COVID crusading doctors in the country. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you said the last name Mikovits. You said Brian. Uh-huh. Is that Judy's husband?
No, Brian Artis is another doctor. Ben Marble and our local folks.
Oh, I'm
Debbie
so sorry.
Leon.
I thought I heard you say Brian Mikovits. Okay, so Judy Mikovits and then Brian Artis. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know who Brian Mikovits is. Is there a Brian Mikovits?
Okay. No, I'm sorry. I confused the last names. I confused the last names.
Yeah. But the point of this is that, and this is something we've got to get you guys connected, and RFK knows about this stuff too because he knows Judy. There are treatments for vaccine recovery. There are things like Cardio Miracle and other things that you can take that can strengthen your immune system, you know, work to dissolve the blood clots, do some other things that is, just because you've had the jab, it's not over, okay? There are methods of recovery. So I got to get you and Judy together so she can help you out and advise, you know,
that
your fellow Marines.
Oh, goodness. Greg, you have no idea how much of an honor that would be because whenever I started seeing Judy Mikovits' videos, one of my master sergeants, actually, he was very influential about showing me all this COVID stuff. And whenever I heard about Judy Mikovits' story, especially with her gag order, especially with her imprisonment, I was like, wow, you know, this is what's going to happen.
You guys like soulmates. You know, she's in the medical field.
It empowered me to know what was coming up and to steady myself for it. So she has been very influential in my journey, in preparing me for what was coming. Oh man, I could go on forever.
I'll get you
about
both on.
Things that have been influential.
I'll get you both on the air. That's what we do here at Action Radio, very spontaneously. So now I have a new crusade. I'll tell you, the people that has been my privilege to meet doing this show, like you and Judy and Jonathan and Josie, a lot of J's. It's fascinating how this all works. And now Neil McCabe, who I got to know, David Tromley, got us connected. Mm-hmm. And so now we can work with One American News. And if they start reporting our citizen legislation, the world's going to change. The world's going to change. We are right now, all of us here are kind of at the center of an amazing change. I want to bring on Dorothy Diana. Normally at this time we have our sex and sensuality report, and we get some really interesting discussions. It's fascinating. This is
Dorothy Diana. I'm familiar with her.
Oh well, okay. Well, then you two should talk. Dorothy, welcome to the show.
Hi. Can you hear me? Okay. I am driving.
Yeah, I hear you fine. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
No, that's
I'm
good.
So excited. I love this
go for
topic.
It.
This is such a great topic. And so early on, you know, during the pandemic, you know, my history was medical industry corruption and conflict of interest, my area of study prior to getting my postmaster's in human sexuality. This was my forte because nobody got better from prescriptions, right? So I was writing prescriptions in the early 2000s, and I used to write for Vioxx, which kills 27,000 people. So it was a long journey for me by the time the pandemic was declared to realize the extent of the medical industry corruption and what they're willing to do for money. So, you know, I got really riled up and the first 6 months, and I was just clinging tenaciously to anyone who was speaking out saying, wait a minute, this is a fishy story. What's happening here? And a lot of my friends who are heavy researchers said they're trying to get the adult mandatory vaccination, which they've been trying to do for years, and this is going to be the gateway to that. And I believed that because these are friends who other things they said had come true, which I won't get into, but the people who stood up were so brave. Well, you know, and recently Rashid Batar died in our area, so I don't know, I'm sure you know who he is. He was... yes, outspoken in early 2020 that this pandemic is not what they're saying it is. Take your preventatives. Here's your regimens you can do to prevent getting hospitalized. We've had 100% success rate. No hospitalizations for those who follow these certain protocols that are easy. And he was completely smeared and silenced. They tried to cancel the advanced medicine conference here in Charlotte, my neighborhood, which is very liberal, which I used to be very liberal. I mean, I kind of still am, was up in arms about him.
We're glad to have you, Dorothy. Glad to be on our
dangerous
side. Dangerous
no, okay. guy. And so so he just died. I don't know if you know. He died a few days ago. Oh. And he was very healthy and suddenly died. And he said, if I die suddenly, it's not a suicide. They've been after me a long time. The FDA and FBI already shut down his medical office twice. For the practices he does, curing cancer, curing people with Guillain-Barré, they got it from the flu shot, and he's right here in my neighborhood, and he just died very mysteriously.
How old
was
he?
And the people who were speaking out,
do you know how old he was?
Oh, healthy as heck in his 50s. Beautiful girlfriend, beautiful life, beautiful practice, no prior health conditions. He alluded in a few months prior that he's beginning to have these strange symptoms, and he anyway, I won't get into it, but
okay.
It sounds awfully suspicious. I hate to think that way, but it doesn't sound like.
How can you not think
is,
that way? With everything that's happening these days, how can you not think that way? You know, how many people have died around the Clintons mysteriously right before they're supposed to testify? The guy that got the barbell on his neck and, you know, Seth Ridge, 4 shots in the back, and they call it a robbery. I mean, come on. We have
a
whole Action Radio.
Signs, the
Which
red
one?
Handkerchief and the hanging from the door. There's the signs, and I don't want to be like sound strange, but there's certain when it's a killing like that, they do it a certain way, and so a lot of the people have been found dead a very strange certain way. So I don't know.
So if anything happens to me, you all have to carry on Action Radio, okay? We're just getting started Action Radio.
Oh my
whatever
goodness.
Happens, you know. I'm serious. In fact, Judy McLeod is a friend of mine for Canada Free Press. She gives this warning all the time. She says, you know, journalists who are controversial or reporters or media people should routinely say, "I'm feeling great. If anything happens to me, it's not a suicide. I'm doing fabulously
That's
well."
Right.
So let me just say that once mm-hmm. again, which you do about every 2 or 3 months. I'm feeling great. You know, I got no problems. Life is wonderful. So, yeah, so if anything happens, it wasn't me. Catherine, back to you. Why don't you, Catherine, you want to talk to Dorothy directly? Feel free. I'll just listen to you, too. It'd be great.
Hi, Dorothy. Yeah, pleasure to finally talk to you over a call. Yeah, I just heard about Mr. Batar, Dr. Batar. Is that his last name?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I just heard about him. God rest his soul. My friend, one of my friends, told me about him, and I'm like, oh, who is this gentleman? I looked him up, and I was immediately after Googling him, I'm like, oh, that was foul play.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah,
immediately.
I agree 100%.
Like, and that's what I've been saying, too. Whenever I was internationally transferred from brig to brig, I was like, I pose no threat. I feel fine. Well, I didn't say that exactly, but I'm like, I pose no threat. I've been cleared as competent. You know, if anything happens to me, it's foul play. Yeah, absolutely. And, oh, man, yeah.
So how do you, I mean, first of all, kudos to you. The people who stood up and spoke out, they're my people for life. Like, this pandemic was a bifurcation of humanity. So you mm-hmm. spiritually, you went one direction or the other. You either saw it, spoke out, or saw it and quietly supported those who did, or you just went with the sheep in the other direction. I mean, and I know a lot of people had a hard decision to make. So I have sympathy. My brother is actually one of those. He's going to call in today. He's a veteran, Navy veteran. But it was a very hard decision because they threatened the livelihood. They threatened the, you know, your community reputation, everything. And so if you stood up against this, I mean, to me, you're like some sort of ascended spiritual person that came down to this earth to fight this battle, and I'm so grateful. I'm serious. Like, it goes beyond the physical for me. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thank you.
It's just you two now, Jonathan.
Thank you for the support, all by the
to...
grace of God.
Go ahead, Catherine. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I was just saying thank you. Thank you to Dorothy and all by the grace of God. That's really who all I can credit, but it's absolutely a spiritual warfare. Absolutely, Dorothy. I agree with you on that.
Is this true? I don't know when I decided that, but that was very helpful to me, to my heart, because I was so confused. I was so, my jaw was dropped for several months. And when I realized, and I had to transform my understanding that this is not a battle in the physical world. It is, but it goes much beyond that. And when you say by the grace of God, that's exactly how I feel. I'm so grateful. I feel like since the pandemic, faster than lightning, like people are shown to me and brought to my world. Like the introductions I get, the people that are around me to support me, it's like because I took those brave steps that were really scary and just kind of got loud and lost a lot of friends and, you know, talked wherever I went with the masks and the just being loud, getting kicked out of places. I feel like I was rewarded by it. Suddenly this new world opened up of like truth and beauty and light and freedom. I don't know. Did you feel that way?
Yes, I most certainly do. Certainly do. We experienced some difficult losses, but oh, I agree. The world that has opened up to us is beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, Dorothy, I'm really glad you called because I was wondering how we were going to figure this out today. But, you know, there's an entire new dimension to this that you've brought to the conversation, and I absolutely appreciate it. Again, Catherine, you get a chance to listen to some of our previous chats. It's been quite amazing. Dorothy's really insightful in just so many areas. And in terms of spirituality, you look who we've talked to today. We had Jonathan, you know, attorney crusader. We had Josie, grew up under communism. We had Neil McCabe, first time on the show from One American News. We've got you. You know, and who knows how many times you get to chat when they're not, you know, cutting you off from the rest of the world, and Dorothy here, and so we're all here, you know, we're all here on Action Radio live when everybody else is playing repeats, you know, and we're still this is Memorial Day, and we're fighting for freedom in many different ways, but the whole spiritual, this is I've always, like I say, I don't credit myself for my ideas. I get tons of ideas all the time, you know, and I don't think any one person would have all the ideas that I have unless God put them there. So I absolutely give credit to God for what's happening here. It's really quite fascinating. But look at and where we can go from this, you know. So I don't know. I guess I put it back to you and Dorothy just to say that there is this fight, the energy that comes. You know, we've already won. And there's no fear.
We've already won.
We've already won.
The lie is fear. And the ammunition they used, the weapon they used, was the biggest one in the dark entities on this earth, which is fear. And, I mean, that has been exposed to me so much. Like, now anytime there's something I'm afraid of, I'm supposed to walk in that direction. And
yeah.
That's what I've learned.
Oh, I love that.
It's actually very exciting. And I tell my kids, I have three boys, and I say, hey, if you can conquer the fear of death, you've won. If you can conquer the fear of death, you've won. So just don't be afraid, and you've won life, you know?
So that's what God gets you. And it's not, we talk about that a lot on the show. And the one common factor is that everybody who believes in freedom believes in God. I have yet to see someone that absolutely believes in freedom and doesn't believe in God, or the other way around, you know, because they're inextricably linked. And once you free yourself from a fear of death, it's amazing what you can accomplish. And it's like, you know, so I'm here. I've got a meaning. I've got a purpose. I have work to do. You know, Dorothy, you have work to do. Catherine, you have work to do. And I have work to do. I got blessed with this crazy idea of putting a radio show with a citizen legislature. And look where we are. I got a major reporter for, one of the biggest news stations out there saying, oh, I'll take a look at that. You know, this is a holiday. Imagine what we do in a week, on the weekday. But do you see that, Catherine, the same
thing?
Well,
truth wins. Truth always wins. Sooner or later, truth always wins. And these forces that have enacted these dark things that are happening, they don't have foresight. So this is what I've learned from my spiritual friends. And they actually don't have – so the divine consciousness, you know, channeling God or talking to God, gives you this sort of wisdom, right? And we've all felt it, the sort of tingling knowledge that's like intuition. And I talk about the five feminine geniuses, and that's one of them. But, I mean, energy-wise, not just women. But this beautiful divine wisdom, which resonates as truth in our heart, and – when you're not following God or whatever you want to call God, you don't have that. You're cut off from that. So these dark entities or humans or whatever they are that enact these things, these horrible policies and trying to move us more towards slavery, they don't have foresight. So what they don't see is that the human spirit, the God human spirit alchemizes. Everything alchemizes to good. So as soon as it looks dark, all of a sudden something beautiful unfolds from that, right? Truth always wins. And so the more we tell the truth and move away from fear, amazing things happen. And that, I feel like that's what we're seeing since the pandemic. Did you all see that also at all?
Catherine?
Yes. Everything, truth materializing, absolutely. My favorite thing that's kept me going through all this, through all of the foreshadowing and that I've done to my commanders about, like, hey, please have patience, you know, please retain me. This is going to happen. That is going to happen. You know, please help me. Please don't put me through this. Behold, I have conquered the world. Jesus Christ said that. And that has kept me going, knowing that as a Catholic, knowing that he paved the way first, right, to be persecuted and killed and then conquer everything by his mission of truth. That has definitely kept me going through all this. Despite all the hell and heartache that happens, behold, I have conquered the world. I can't express how in love with that I am and how much that's kept me going. And basically kept me on this path of truth seeking and truth sharing.
Yes, you're on a divine mission and you fulfilled it. And I think the rewards are going to be endless for you. And it's very exciting.
I just love listening to you talk. I got a question, though.
Well,
I got a question for Darth.
My brother's call in, too, Greg. Yeah, but I just want to give you a heads up. My brother is. Yeah, he's kind of waiting for his time. I said, anytime,
because
we just flow in our conversation. He is a veteran, and he has a poem, and I bet he's feeling very inspired right now. But go ahead and ask your question, Greg.
Yeah, as soon as he calls in, it'd be great. Well, I'm just curious, because I have both of you. In fact, I think he's there right now. Do you look at the psychology here for a bit? Do women fight battles differently? Spiritual battles, legal battles? Is there, you know, because I'm curious what both of you think about that. But let me start with Dorothy.
Well, women, when we say women, we have to, I mean, I like to say energy because women hold, the average woman holds both energies, right? From the spectrum, the masculine to the feminine, right? So some women reside more in their feminine energy and they're more comfortable there. Some women, because of their job or because of just their natural tendency, reside a little more in their masculine energy, but a healthy person has access to both. So when you say women, do you mean people who hold, I'm not trying to be all woke, but this is how I've always seen it. People who reside mostly in their feminine energy. So typically women.
Okay. I'm just curious. Yeah. Catherine, what do you think?
Yes, I believe there's a difference in how, men and women fight. Something I was musing on the other day is all of the famous court martials throughout history, especially those of, let's say, Billy Mitchell. Who was the Korean? Bobby, help me out.
I'm thinking. I mean, the fact you brought up court martials in history, this is fascinating because Billy Mitchell is a great study.
Bobby Garwood.
I'm not familiar.
And people like he was a POW in Korea. It was either Korea or Vietnam. He was there for 16 years, and then he was court-martialed by the government for aiding and abetting the enemy or something absolutely wild. I was exposed to a story through reading the book Perfidy by John Holland and Father Patrick Baccio here in the Miramar Brig a few weeks ago. But I was musing the other day about how men and women go about handling this differently because I know it's probably an unpopular thing for me to say, but at the end of it all, you know, after our first hour that I've talked, all I want back is my job. All I want back is my, you know, Marines. All I want back is, you know, the community that I rightfully belong to and, you know, the crap that they stripped away from me. And yeah, I think this is the difference between men and women, but I don't seek any retribution. Whatever the consequences are from other entities, right, to the people who persecuted me, that's out of my hands. But I don't seek any retribution. I would hope that if justice is restored, these men who wronged me are able to be like, wow, what a strong soul, you know, that Marine is. I should be proud to want to have Marines like her in my ranks and, you know, hopefully bring them to Jesus, hopefully bring them to God through my strength, you know, that I displayed. Like, personally, I don't seek retribution. And maybe that's a stark difference because I have a lot of people calling for bloodshed. I have a lot of people calling for, like, you know, kind of a bloodthirsty approach. And I'm like, no, we need men, you know, to talk about, you know, the wrongs that they have done and caution others on perpetuating this cycle. Like, you know, the only way to reform is inside. And I'm sorry, but it is. And I learned that from the Catholic Church because all of the great doctors and all the great saints, you know, I'm such a geek and such a nut on Catholicism and Jesus, but I learned that from
you're
the faith.
You're in good company
the only
here.
Way,
Yeah,
the only way to reform is from within. And, you know, whenever you have, you know, people go on the outside and, you know, start a new thing, well, then it's just, it's chaos. You need to reform from the inside and say, look, this is the caliber of people we can produce and have produced. And, well, we don't want another two court martial, 113-day jail Brig debacle on our hands as the military. You know, it's not the best for public relations and recruiting. So let's go about this whole affair different ways, right? There's my tangent, but yeah.
Oh no, I love it. Yeah, Dorothy, I think I've got your brother on the line, but I can leave the air and screen the call, or you can just text me his number. would be the quickest way to do it. That way I can stick around and chat with you guys.
It's definitely him.
Well, let's find out.
I promise.
All right, let me take a chance, and let's see. Is this Dorothy's brother? Enter and sign in, please.
I'll try and do that. I'm not sure how to do that.
What's your first name?
Douglas.
Douglas, okay. That's how you do it. You're in.
All right. I just want to make sure.
What's your story?
What's my story? I'm not really sure what my story is. What's the call about? It's Memorial Day, so.
Dorothy, didn't you tell your brother what we were talking about today? All right. Well, just hang on, listen in.
He's not used to being all chatty and being on the radio, so he's military.
Okay.
He needs some specific instructions, sir.
Okay. Well, first thing, just hang back for a bit. We've got, all right, who's talking now? Next. Is that Dorothy? Oh, Douglas. I know you're here. Yeah. All right. So instructions. Yeah, hang out for a bit, listen for a bit. We've got Catherine Arnett, who is having all kinds of legal trouble because she refused to take a jab that I consider illegal to be mandated. That's where we stand. We've been going through this for actually almost the last hour and a half. It's been fascinating. I'm just curious, for you, any military insights. What's that?
Yeah. I was curious if Doug was familiar.
Do you know
he's had to go through this.
No. Probably with the story, not her story.
Okay. Well, let's hear the story. What's your COVID story?
Well, I got vaccinated. I was retired.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to go through the legal hassles whether or not I wanted to get vaccinated or not, because I retired in 2017. But I know friends. I got friends that out because they didn't want to take the
Are you there still?
I'm sorry.
Did you mute yourself? Okay.
You're cutting.
All right.
You're cutting
I just want to make sure you're done. All right. Yeah, cut off for a little bit. Yeah. And I think Catherine is on hold for just a little bit. She'll be right back too. Just to sort of talk about what we've been talking about today. This has been a fascinating day. The first hour, I actually read a lot of the poetry written by soldiers, written by people about war. And there's a lot, there's kind of a misplaced glorification, I think, that people sort of, those that haven't been in war are the first to describe, how wonderful it is for the next one. It just doesn't work that way. Other controversial things that the fight for freedom is waged on many levels. And one of the strongest fighters for freedom in the country right now is Catherine. And so by standing up for principle, standing up for her rights, and standing up to not have to comply with what all of us consider an illegal order to take a mandated, jab of something that is still experimental under an experimental use authorization, literally they can't do that, and yet they are. And so this is where we stand right now. So any insight, any commentary, anything you want to continue with, and Catherine will let us know when she's back, and we'll get back to her.
Yeah, so in 1999, just right before – but they mandated that we take the anthrax shot.
Oh, I want to talk about that. Yeah, this is a good topic. Okay, go ahead. All right. So, because to me, this is where, I'm what you call anti-vax, and I have been since early 90s, maybe even earlier, late 80s. But ever since I heard about, Gulf War syndrome, anthrax vaccine, squalene, the chemical that's in it, that's also in the flu shot, all that kind of stuff, I'm like, wait a minute. What is going on here? So I'm curious what you have to say.
So a really good friend of mine, he was a linguist. He was an Arabic linguist, spoke different dialects. And again, it was right before September 11th, but they kicked him out because he refused the anthrax shot.
Mm-hmm.
And cited the fact that it wasn't a legal order.
Mm-hmm.
That's the executive order that it was that mandated it. but was the fact that it wasn't the fact that he didn't want to take the shot. It was the fact that the shot was not produced in
You're having a little trouble with your line, and so there's some beeping in the background and some other things going on.
Sorry.
That's okay. If it gets bad, I'll just ask you to call back in. That's okay. And I got your number now, so I'll know who you are.
Want me to call back in?
Well, keep talking for now, but I don't know if you speak a little louder, a little closer to the phone or something. I just want to make sure all your message gets heard, because this will be podcast and, sent around the world and all the stuff that we do here. Sorry, I couldn't resist. But this is critical because the COVID, it's like anthrax too. We've been through this already.
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah, did you want to add more to it?
No, that's it. I mean, they put him on.
You better call back in. I'm having real trouble hearing you. Could you just give us a quick call back in? Try again. We'll see if we can get a clearer line. Yeah, I'm sorry, Douglas. I really like hearing from you, too. Yeah, there he goes. Okay. I'm still getting some also fuzz from another. Maybe it's Catherine's line.
Is it me?
It could be you, Dorothy.
I'm
going to mute
you.
Yeah, I'm going to mute you for a second. I'll find out. Yeah, it's her line. Yeah, it's your line. Yeah, that's okay.
Oh, no.
It's not
the
bad,
problem. It's
but,
me.
No. It's just that the Douglas's phone was real quiet. I had a tough time hearing him. I didn't want to
Douglas
do that.
Douglas is so rural. Douglas is very rural, and he's very near you. He lives very near you, and I'm not going to say anything else because we're private here.
No,
but,
we don't want to give away details.
FYI.
Yeah, okay. Because
I was hanging. Greg, I was excited. I was like, oh, my gosh, this anthrax is forced. Tell us about it. And I felt like, either he was cutting out or, some people just don't tell detailed stories. I'm like, no,
that's
give
okay.
us
it's
more.
It's new to radio, my first show
wasn't
great.
Forced to take the anthrax. Yeah. This has gone to this is yeah. This is not the first go around, and they've experimented mm-hmm. with the military for a long time. And I hope this is a huge wake up and that the military knows how to say no from here on out.
Well, why
did
they wait
like
the first time? Anthrax, too. I mean, I said that for a reason. So what's the psychology? You're the psychologist here. You're a resident psychologist. So let's analyze this. Why is it beneficial to the military to force something that they know either doesn't work, isn't appropriate, that everybody has immunity to anyway in the case of COVID? I mean, by the time the mandates came around, we'd all been exposed. Dr. McCullough said 94% of the people have already had COVID and 100% of the people have been exposed. He didn't say 100%. I'm doing that from something I heard earlier that everybody was going to be exposed anyway. So why? Why are they doing this? Why? What's the psychology?
Because anymore, I don't believe, here we go. Here comes the crazy.
Okay.
I don't care. There's a lot of evidence. Anymore, I think many of the people who got the, quote, vaccine got other things. I believe it's biowarfare. It is to reduce the population. I believe there were different batches given, and probably the mm-hmm. same thing happened in the military. So I think they begin experimenting on usually indigenous populations, third world countries, then they move to our poorer people in this country. There's lots of evidence. And now it's the widespread population. And the military is involved somewhere in there too. They experiment on their military in order to get, basically slaves, basically just conscienceless slaves that obey orders and are triggered by hypnotic triggers. I believe this. And so I don't think it's always what they say.
In terms of
those shots, and I think Judy Mikovits said that also. It's not what they say it is in those shots frequently. So.
But in terms of a psychological motivation, Doug's back, which is good. But, they did the same thing with anthrax. They did the same thing with COVID. They never tested for immunity. Anthrax is cow disease, and yet they test them.
They have
faith,
but they don't care. It has nothing to do with giving you immunity. It has nothing to do with conferring immunity. I don't believe anymore, the vaccines. It has to do with calcifying the pineal gland, aluminum plaques in the brain, an easily controlled population that's emotionally disconnected and spiritually disconnected, and to reduce some of the population. This is what I believe, based on the evidence.
That's fine.
Psychologically, I'm not a psychologist. I love that topic, though, but...
Okay. Close
you
enough.
Know, we look at applied psychology and applied say it again. Oh, ha, 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 thank you. Thank you so much. Applied psychology, if you look at the field of applied psychology, this is the tactics that were used, this mass psychosis, mass formation psychosis, and the fear that if you do hypnotic fear messaging for 2 months in a population, 80-something percent will never stop believing that message after 2 months of constantly hearing it, no matter what evidence is provided to the contrary. So a lot of these high-level applied psychology tactics were used, and it's very interesting to see who was susceptible and who wasn't. And I personally believe it has a lot to do with if you were heavily brainwashed by media and by the school system and traumatized when you're young, which is prevalent in our culture, then you're much more susceptible to this applied psychology hypnotic brainwashing.
I must be immune. Because I objected from the very first. I mean, we had Bill Gertz. I'll give Douglas a little history of the show. Bill Gertz was on from my friend Dr. Peter Pry, who I believe died of the COVID shot last August. He had cancer. It was in remission. It was going away. He gets the COVID shot. 6 months later, he's dead from the same cancer. I don't think that's a coincidence. Anyway, so we had Bill Gertz on, the Washington Times national security correspondent, talking about Wuhan back February 25th of 2020. So we had him on. Trump had just banned travel from China at the end of January. But 3 weeks later, we got Bill Gertz on. 2 days later, I wrote a bill for Congress saying they could only spend half their money on COVID, on a vaccine, because we already had early treatments. We didn't need them. You know, this is still February, right? 2 days later from, or 3 days later from that, March 2nd, I'm broadcasting a show saying that we have chloroquine. I got the study from Marseille, France, Dr. Didier Raoult. You know, I said, there's no pandemic. We got a cure for it. You know, and of course, doctors don't like cure. They like treatment. But I was calling it a cure. I said, we can handle this. This is no big deal. And I had a bunch of articles supporting the same thing. So early March, this is 2 weeks before 15 days to slow the spread. I'm already talking about the government response is a total joke. There's no reason for any of this. And then we started talking about the fact they can't take our rights away during a pandemic, because you can never take anybody's rights away. So let's go back to Douglas, seeing as he called back in. So in the military, did they tell you any of this, you know, for COVID or anthrax or anything? Or go ahead, tell me.
Lawful order. So you take it or you don't.
Is it a lawful order? Is it a lawful order because they said so? You know, that's like the FBI saying the whistleblowers aren't whistleblowers because they didn't call them whistleblowers, even though we know they are, because the FBI would never call their own FBI whistleblowers whistleblowers. Did they say it was lawful because they issued it? You know, this is a question I have for Catherine when she comes back.
No, you know, of course. And you should all stand against what you perceive as an unlawful order.
Right.
But it doesn't matter if you're enlisted, because you can have what goes against what we call uniform code of justice. That's it. The CO says you have to take a shot. If not, you suffer the consequences. Now, it's non-judicial. So they take some money away. You get 45 days restrictions. And after that, they'll kick you out. You won't have anything on your record.
Yeah.
It's not legal in the legal respect, in that the fact that it's a Uniform Code of Military Justice, and it's legal. It is what it is. So it's a lawful order.
Huh. Interesting. Catherine's back. And so Catherine, I've got Douglas, who's Dorothy's brother. And we're talking anthrax. And this is a question I have from Douglas. I've heard Catherine there.
Yeah,
hi, sorry.
That's okay. Everybody jumps right in. We all step on each other. It's standard procedure around here.
Yeah.
But what's interesting
anthrax.
Is
I heard anthrax, and then I heard a little bit about UCMJ 45 days restriction. Yeah. I've been in touch a little bit with Dale Saran over the last 2 years. He's been instrumental. He's awesome. But
who's that?
Catch me up, I guess. Dale Saran was a major, I think, whenever he started defending service members for not getting the anthrax, and he wrote a little publication about it. He was working in, like, the East Texas circuit a lot for the Coast Guard and just keeping a lot of people abreast with his foundation or firm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my question is, because what happened with anthrax, I call this anthrax too, and I just started doing that this show.
Yeah, no kidding.
We've been through all this before. And I documented this back on WBY when I first started in radio. This is back in 2017, 2018, reporting on, because like I said, I've been anti-vax since the early 90s, or maybe even late 80s, I'm not sure. Somewhere along the way, I realized that this was a bunch of nonsense, that, you know, we have immune systems. These diseases, as Judy Mikovits said, these diseases that they're quote, vaccinating for aren't around anymore. You know, so this is just money. There's a bunch of really, really crazy. Oh, Dorothy, you missed this too. We're going to get Catherine and Judy Mikovits on the show together. I'm going to start chatting, and so that's going to be fascinating. Yeah, you're free to call in then too. But since we've seen
Hi, Mike. I like Judy Mikovits. She's such a hero. She was one of the first people I listened to. Also, in the beginning of the pandemic, she was. When I found her, I was like, she knows Fauci.
Everyone's
like, she's crazy. I'm like, no, she's not.
No, she's not. No, she's the one who's not crazy. We call him Dr. Fascist around here for anybody that wants to, needs a translation. So it's Dr. Fascist, the genocidal, psychopathic, avaricious, narcissistic, pathologically lying vaccine drug pusher. That's his full title, in case anybody's wondering.
That took
practice. Yeah.
An AIDS creator, an AIDS patient's killer. Mm-hmm. But which the gay and lesbian community that's older, they know all about him. So a lot of those older LGBTQ are like, very side-eyeing Fauci, which I love. But I did tell Doug about your Memorial Day and the poetry. So I just want to make sure he gets a chance to, he got a really good poem. And I want to make sure he has a chance to do it before he has to go. So I'm just going to throw that in there.
Douglas, let's hear your poem.
I love poetry.
Yeah, check out the first hour. I read like the first hour, but let's hear Douglas's poem. What do you got for us?
It's got me through a lot. It's got me through many deployments. It's got me through Iraq. It was told to me by my dad when I was a kid. So I hope you can hear it.
He's also a veteran. Yeah, also a veteran.
Also a veteran, yeah. My father fought in World War II.
Wow.
So, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, so make allowance for their doubting too. You can wait, not be tired by waiting. For being lied about, and don't deal in lies. For being hated, don't give way to hating. Yet don't look too good, nor talk too wise. If you can dream, do not make dreams your master. If you can think, do not make thoughts your aim. If you can meet with triumph and disaster, treat those two imposters the same. If you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves, make a trap for fools. But watch the thing you gave your life to, broken, and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools. If you can make one heap of all your winnings, and with a turn of pitch and toss, and lose, start again, beginning. Never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your long after they're gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings, nor lose the common touch. If neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you, but none too much. You can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distant love. Here's the earth and everything in it. And, which is more, you'll be a man, my son. That's it. Dedicate that to my son, Adrian.
Is that Rudyard Kipling?
Gorgeous.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Sounds familiar.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that applies just as much to women and daughters as men and sons. I don't see a difference, especially when we see the fight that Catherine's waging. And so it's interesting. He wrote in the 1800s, but I think it applies every bit as much. And so,
well,
Catherine,
it.
Do you, yeah, go ahead. You read it. That's the way it's written. We don't change poetry or we don't change anything here. But I'm just saying in a context of
today.
I love
it. I think it's so inspiring. I think it's If by Rudyard Kipling, as you said. And I have that posted. You know, I told you I have three boys. And I think the masculine energy is inspired differently than the feminine. And we all carry both. But I have that posted on my bathroom wall because I want them to read that along with Invictus and a few other things. I want them to feed their masculine soul, because raising them as a single mom, you know, I just feel like they need to hear those kind of inspiring words or just have it in their head. I love that poem, and I think it's okay to have things directed to men and women, and doesn't have to be directed to both.
Okay, no,
but I
just see the parallels there. Yeah. So to me, it's not a conflict. Catherine, what do you think?
Yeah. I'm going to be honest, I have not heard that poem read out loud in quite a while. But the things that stood out to me were the two sentences about if you can walk with kings or something like that, and then the poem, and then the stance before, if you can walk and keep your way, that, you know, I resonate
Douglas, can you just,
with that. Like,
can you say those again real quick for us?
Yeah, read those
Douglas.
Lines again.
Yeah.
He's already
taken off his computer. Okay. I mean, we can find it again. Go ahead. You got it there?
Okay, if you can walk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings, nor lose the common touch.
Nor lose the common touch.
That's very Trumpian, by the way.
You don't have to be. I walk with kings, but I'm humble, I believe is.
Yeah.
Isn't that lovely to walk with crowds and not lose your virtue, which we saw in the pandemic? The crowd was doing something. Mm-hmm. Can you? This was a challenge. So I have a lot of friends who got really loud and angry. And then I felt like this realization dawned that more, how do you reach people in the crowd without, so how do you be with the crowd but also keep yourself? How do you, because I feel like then you connect more and then you're more likely to get people to see, you know, what you're trying to say. I don't know, that's kind of what I'm taking from them, like walking, being with the crowd, but also knowing who you are and keeping your boundaries and your values. That's a great message.
Yeah, I like the part. Go ahead, Doug.
I'm sorry. I believe the idea would be stoic.
Go ahead.
A lot of my background is Eastern philosophy.
Oh. Let's hear some.
Different books to my son, mainly Book of the Five Rings. Eastern philosophy, that sort of thing. So what we talk about, following people, I think a great book, oh my goodness, I can't remember the name of it. Oh, goodness.
We'll get you back next week. You're never done with Action Radio. We always have another week to ask Dorothy. We'll pick it up next week. It's kind of like a standard theme.
It's how people follow other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's bring it to Catherine. What would Eastern philosophy have for Catherine in her battle right now? You know, when like all the world, except for those of Saudi, are against her, all the government world, you know, the official world.
Did you say Eastern? What is that the word that I heard? Eastern spirituality?
Eastern philosophy, like Buddhism, Confucianism, Eastern philosophy, like ancient Asian wisdom, as opposed to.
Oh, sure. Okay, whenever I hear Eastern, I think Eastern Orthodox.
No, that's different. That's like Russian Greek Church, the Western Catholic. Yeah, we need to be for that chat. she's our minister and Bible scholar. Yeah, she even reads the ancient Greek and Hebrew. I mean, she's amazing. But Douglas, do you have something for us on this? I'm kind of curious.
So I think there's slivers.
Go ahead, Catherine.
No, I think there's slivers of truth everywhere. And before I really came back to the Catholic Church with a fervor and passion in my heart to stay and latch on with it, I was definitely perusing through the Eastern spirituality. In fact, like Buddhism was a very big source of spirituality for me for a while. I'm not going to say that there's it's similar, but there's parallels and shreds of truth about, you know, oneness and peace and just I was reading books about religions in the brig, and I'm so ashamed I can't recall to mind everything.
Listen, you just told us you read about religion in the brig. I mean, how many people can say in the brig? Okay, I mean, you're really special, much more so than you know. So it's just the way you casually say things. Yeah, there I was in solitary thinking about, you know, the Catholic Church and Jesus. I mean, this is what makes you so incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so let me just toss out some compliments here. But it's true, because not everybody can say what you can say. The battles that you've waged, and just to be able to calmly say, yeah, I was thinking about that in the brig the other day. You know, that to me is a miracle itself. You know, I just find that fascinating.
It's a privilege, Greg, to be able to say that. And sometimes people look at me and my morbid sense of humor that I'm just able to say that off the cuff and just keep going in the conversation. But it's part of my blessed journey that God's granted me. But I love exploring religions and like learning about them, right? Seeing what parallels or what slivers of truth is mirrored, you know, to the Catholic Church. I guess just off the top of my head, Buddhism and the more peaceful kind of sides of it about oneness and being focused. I learned about like the whole eight noble fold path. I guess I can go off that. There's a lot of noble things to be done in this spiritual battle right now. But truthfully, Greg, I could talk to you more about my Catholic faith.
No, we can do that. Listen, you're welcome. You know you're welcome anytime on the show, right? You know you do not need an invitation to call. Okay.
Yeah,
so
no,
just to
absolutely.
Let you know,
like,
whenever you're any
I don't
report.
Know,
yep.
Yeah, I don't know what I could offer. I don't know what fruitful things I could offer about Eastern spirituality right now.
That's okay.
If that makes
no, that's
sense.
Fine. That's
like, I'd love to engage in like a, you know, religious debate talk at some point, but right now I don't know what I can bring to the table.
That's okay. Douglas, do you have something to add? Because I want to do one more poem before we close pretty much at the top of the hour. We can go over, but I think we've covered a lot today. So Douglas, I've got one I want to read, but did you want to comment more on any Eastern philosophical wisdom that would help Catherine at this point? Or just to add to our conversation?
About that, a lot of the Eastern philosophy that sounds nice and flowery, but you have to remember that they slaughtered each other for 1300 years until they came to some sort of peace. My wife is Japanese, so I know that's the difference between what we think is peaceful and loving. But even religion has war, even religion has fights and battles, because that's what life is, that's what we fight for. Why we fight. In fact, my wife
But like spiritual battles as well as physical battles, in fact, they're usually intertwined. And I think that I hadn't even thought of that in bringing in, this is what Dorothy was adding, this is the idea of the spiritual battle going along with the actual physical and legal battles that are happening right now. Doug?
It's the same thing. They teach you. Yeah. That's why you look. So you understand it when you have to face it.
Mm-hmm. Catherine, ever studied martial arts? Just curious.
A little bit. I didn't get into it until like the Marine Corps. And there's this program called the Marine Corps Martial Arts Program. It mixes a bunch of practices into one. And you level up by belts. There's five levels or six, and I'm only at the second level. Right now I got hurt getting my second belt. And while I was trying to get my third belt, yeah, I got hurt, so I didn't complete the course. But yeah, I've been exposed to it a little bit.
because there's a spirituality to it as well. I mean, the way of the warrior, there's all kinds of stuff that was written way back when, and especially I remember during early men's movement stuff in the 80s, Robert Bly was talking about the warrior on various archetypes. Dorothy and I should, I'm sure we should get into that as well. Here's one of my favorites. And I was reminded of this when Doug was talking about, you know, from the poem, if, you know, when your truth is lied about by knaves, something to that effect. And I was thinking of Teddy Roosevelt's speech. Mm. And Teddy Roosevelt made an amazing speech. And this, you know, he talks about it for, you know, he uses the collective man, but I really think this applies to anybody who fights. And this is from a fabulous speech he gave, but this is one paragraph seems to be the one everybody quotes. He says, "It is not the critic who counts, nor the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who is at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat."
Correct.
That's my inspiration for Action Radio. It's like, hey, I don't care what they say. You know, and the knaves have lied about us. If you're not in the arena, and all of us are in the arena, if you're not in the arena, then, you know, you're a weenie. Roosevelt said it's better. But that's you know.
That is so beautiful. I've never heard that, and that's so beautiful and inspirational, and I think it's going to go on the bathroom wall.
There you go. Let me see. So just look up, let me see, Teddy Roosevelt's speech. Just look up the man in the arena. And that's what it comes to, just one paragraph.
Because you're right, it's easy to criticize. And people say, oh, they should have done this, or they should have done this. And like, really? Why don't you get out there and do any one thing?
Yeah,
get out there and show me one thing. Yeah.
Well, here's what I get. So maybe you can help me out. I hear this all the time. That will never pass Congress. That can't be done.
Yeah, right.
That
if
can't
everyone
be done.
Thought that way, nothing would ever be done. If everyone thought
exactly.
that way, oh, so frustrating. Those people are not my people.
Yeah. Yeah, but I hear this, you know, especially the bills, and one of our biggest ones now, and this is hugely ambitious. I understand that. Here's another quote, too, that Howard Jarvik, the director, the inventor of the Jarvik artificial heart, this is back 70s, mm-hmm. I think early 80s, he said that leaders are people with, a poorly developed sense of fear and no concept of the odds against them. I'm like, yeah, that sounds good.
I love it.
And that's us here. We have no sense of fear, and not only do we have no concept of the odds against us, we don't care. Catherine, do you care about the odds mm-hmm. against you? Do you care for a second? Do you ever give a thought to that? Does it ever matter?
With Christ by my side, no.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So we have 3 minutes left. Go ahead.
Yeah, I hope they realize that Christ is by my side and they see the strength that I mm-hmm. derive from him. So, again, with the whole, like, retribution, no retribution thing, I was interviewed by Sons of Liberty last year, and, you mm-hmm. know, I was asked, man, you know, do you ever think these guys are Nazis, these things that they're doing to you? And I told him, no, I don't, because ultimately right now, I guess maybe seeing the goodness in people might be my naivete, but right now I think there are some good men who are being made to do bad things because of the bureaucratic office that they hold. Mm-hmm. But eventually we will be seeing bad men seeking these positions of power to inflict bad things. So
I think that's where I see that. But do you see, have people apologized?
Yeah, but,
you know,
but
Catherine,
but
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure. Have people said to you, I'm sorry, I have to do this. I'm just following orders. And I hate the term just following orders.
Yes,
that's what the Nuremberg trials are about.
All
Go
the
ahead.
Time. They'll look at me and they'll be like,
okay, wait, one at a time. Yes. We can go over time. Go ahead, Catherine, tell me.
Yeah, no, all the time. My commanders have said it to my face. Of course, off the record, yeah. They're like, man, I'm sorry I have
That's
to do
not giving
this.
Names.
I'm just following records. Yeah. Literally verbatim. And then all the people
who, like, were taking me to the brig, all the people who were putting me in handcuffs, all the people who were doing this, like, dude, I totally agree with you, but I, you know, like, sorry it's happening, but for what it's worth, I don't blame you for what you're doing. And of course, I keep composure, but I'm thinking to myself, why the fuck did y'all not do it too, you know? There's
yeah.
power in numbers.
Yeah,
I'm so sorry. I just said
okay.
the F word on your show, Greg. I'm so sorry.
We're not regulated by the FCC.
I had to mute you because we
have noise on your line. But yeah, so F bombs occasionally, if they're appropriate, I don't care. You know, and that was definitely appropriate. But yeah, Doug, go ahead. Doug, you had a comment. You breathed.
It's good to know. I'll keep my voice quiet.
Well, no, you can be loud. I mean, you know, I just think there's so many great words in the English language. You know, we don't need too many F-bombs. But in Catherine's case, that's absolutely appropriate. Dorothy drops a few herself every once in a while. It's really kind of funny.
I do.
But this, you know, we were just following orders. You know, that's what got Nazis hung after the Nuremberg trials. And yet it's still here. It's still with us. And they, you know, like you said, Catherine, these people apologize. I'm sorry. And I can't believe the comment you made. I'm sorry as they're putting you in handcuffs. I'm sorry as they're locking the door to the jail. I'm sorry. I have to do it. And did you ever say to them, no, you don't? And did you ever get a response?
Oh, man, I should have.
Okay, well, keep that for next time, you know. Next time someone does something, no, it's just the next time someone does something to you that you know is unjust and they know is unjust and they say, I have to do this, I'm just following orders, just look at them and say, no, you don't. And then tell us the reaction. Dorothy,
Roger,
what do you think?
You got it.
Well, I got to sign off, but I will say that's exactly what I thought it was the Nazis when you said, I'm just following orders. That mm-hmm. didn't fly in the Nuremberg trials, and it won't fly if this ever hopefully comes to a good closure that's fair and just. And I had friends, you know, on the West Coast where they really tightened the thumbscrews on the pandemic fear for Los Angeles in that area. And mm-hmm. I think I probably told you I had nurse friends and respiratory therapist friends that confessed to me quietly and privately that they were given insane orders during the first few months of COVID that were so against ethics and hospital protocol.
Like what?
Taking patients from a 2-liter nasal cannula directly to a vent, not turning the patients, staying out of the rooms entirely, basically leaving them to rot, and being told, do not code patients. We're not coding anyone. And it was certain doctors on the unit, certain internists, if it was their shift, that you knew not to go into a coding patient's room. This is intensive care unit. And and then
what's a coding patient?
Certain doctors. So a patient that's going into cardiac arrest or dying. So actively
okay.
dying patients. So mm-hmm. in the intensive care unit, that's basically who you have. You have patients that are very tenuous on life support. And mm-hmm. your job is to keep them alive and then get them better. And mm-hmm. so when a code happens, everyone runs to the code and everyone does everything they can to save this person's life. And they were told, do not, if there's a code, do not go in there. We're not answering codes this month.
Do you know why?
I'm not kidding. I
no,
heard
you know
this
why?
Correctly, a respiratory
you know why.
Therapist.
Yeah, I'll tell
of
you
course
why.
Of course I know why, but this is
yeah.
the Nuremberg trials. So I told my friend, I said, if you're going along with that, you can't go along with that. They're gonna throw you to the wolves when this all comes out. They're not gonna protect you when you say this was hospital protocol and they told me they would fire me if I didn't go along. The court doesn't care. Mm-hmm. You know, you have your own license, and so I don't know. That's what I thought of when you said I was just following orders. Like, that happened. That happened during the pandemic.
Oh, yeah. Listen, we have Rebecca Charles and we had Scott Shara, who both lost their daughters to hospital protocols. We had another person. I forget her name right now. But we know the $130,000 per COVID, basically murder. I mean, I call it the remdesivir ventilator death march for a reason. That these people were put on a protocol of death. They were denied food and water. I think Marie Clark comes to mind. Maybe that's her name. Anyway, don't want to miss. Anyway, she's been on the show, and she was almost killed by the hospital. And so we know this. We know this whole story. In fact, Rebecca Charles would be another good person to get with you, Catherine, because there's an entire movement growing of people who lost, you know, loved ones to a purposeful hospital protocol of death. And like I said, I'm pretty blunt on this show. I don't mind saying, you know, the truth. Got no problem with it. But we know that happened. And so that has mm-hmm. to come out too. So Catherine, just, you know, I'll give you the last word to you, but stay safe, stay away from drugs. Hope, you know, my biggest fear is that something's going to happen to you. You know, we just won't hear from you. you know, or whatever's going to happen, or some accident, some horrible thing. God bless you and protect you, because we need you around. And so, yeah, on that cheery note, let me give the last word to you,
well,
and then we should probably wrap it up.
Let the energy, God's energy and the energy of Christ surround her with a golden light of protection and a shield, mm-hmm. so that she can march through the rest of her intended life, following her journey, with strength and God's protection. Amen.
Amen. Douglas, you got the last
Amen.
Word?
Thank
last
you
word to
so much for the protection.
Okay. Yes.
Doug, you got one more comment,
God
then I'll give the last
y'all.
Word to Catherine. Oh, okay. Doug, one more time or no?
Catherine, hey, all my good wishes towards you for this Memorial Day. Everything has gone through. Just, you know, out there, we're still here, and thank you very much for having me on your radio.
Oh, come on back and we'll get you a better line. Hopefully we'll get a more
thank
phone.
You Douglas, God bless you too.
You too. In fact, we went to
so last word to you, Catherine. Anything we can do to help? Any and like I say, we'll talk off the air obviously, but any last words for today, because you've been fabulous to have on the show. Thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for these 2 hours and the opportunity to listen to great patriots and talk with y'all. Truly just peace of Christ upon y'all, and keep praying, please. I need all the prayers, and everyone else needs all the prayers in this whole journey. I really treasure and value that, and praying for swift resolution to all of this and that justice can be restored.
Amen. And you getting your job back.
Yes,
I want to see a video. I want to see a video of you as a drill instructor. That would be awesome. I can visualize it right now.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, thanks everybody.
All right, thank you all. God bless. Happy Memorial Day. God bless.
Happy Memorial Day, everyone.
Thank you, Catherine. And I got to play our announcements and commercials and stuff. I mean, I've saved the whole show. I mean, I really didn't want to interrupt the show just for that reason. So I'm going to play everything now. And then I'll probably play Stars and Stripes Forever at the end, give a little classical music rendition here. And this podcast will be available probably about 10, 15 minutes after I'm off the air. I'll probably send links out again because I'm going to be changing the title just because this is such an amazing 2 hours. And so we'll take care of that, get you the new links. You'll be able to share this. And I'm going to share this with some pretty interesting people. My Congressman Matt Gaetz and some other folks who I know in the Trump administration. Let's see if we can get going here. So Catherine, if you get a call from Donald Trump in a couple of weeks, you know, you'll know where it started. That would be fabulous.
Roger.
We'll
Roger,
be talking.
I will be vigorously looking forward to that.
Well, I'm waiting for that call myself, you know, so I mean, but this is Action Radio. There are no limitations here, only possibilities. You know, there is no, I can't, there is no, that can't be done. There is no, you're crazy to think, da-da-da, fill in the blank. None of that stuff exists for us here. This is the, you know, we don't talk about what has happened. We talk about what can happen. But let me just play you. In fact, I'll play you my favorite little promo, since you're also on the line for a minute here. This pretty much sums up, you know, what I think of Action Radio. And it happens to be like really cool. I'm scrolling down. Really cool surf music. Just sort of set it off. Okay, here we go. This is all my cliches in one spot.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take, that is Action Radio.
And that's how we do it. So I got a few more things to play here. So everybody, and just let everybody go. I think, you know, anybody still on the line, you can listen in. But I'm just going to play a few commercials and things. And this is our main website here, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative website is writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. Substack, gregpenglis.substack.com. Contributions, givesendgo.com/actionradio. My public email is greg@writeyourlaws.com. And so I want to thank Catherine. I want to thank everybody involved with the show today. This is a very Memorial Day show. And on that note, a few announcements to play and then some more music. And I'll be back tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Central Time. And we're going to take on the budget deal. I'm going to be telling you all about it in excruciating detail. And until then, Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive. Conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Grace Care. And now as an affiliate of Grace Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Grace Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is gravecare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at gravecare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Grace Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. Hello, this is Greg Penglis for our newest shooting range here in Milton, Florida. Stand Your Ground. My friend Jason Myers and crew are creating an incredible facility for our city. Stand Your Ground is located at 6632 Elva Street. The phone number is 850-789-1776. Their email is standyourground1776@gmail.com. Here you'll find either in process or already going an indoor shooting range, axe throwing, archery, a rage room, self-defense classes, concealed carry weapons classes, security license training, Paintball, a full-service gun store, and 24/7 online ordering. So come on down or contact them by phone, email, or website and learn how you can best stand your ground. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engines.